We are live with a completely unnecessary podcast. That's what we're doing, right? Yeah.
Yes.
For Wednesday, February 5th, 2014, alongside my compadre and most of the time friend, Ian Ferguson.
Howdy do.
My name is Pat Contry. We are your host for the evening. Ian, what's going on in your neck of the woods?
Well, Bonnie and I decided on a wedding date.
So. Woo!
Yeah, that's exciting. That makes things, you know, extremely real. So the next few months of my life, more than a few, are going to be, you know, pretty intense.
Was it fake before?
No.
Well, you were only engaged for like 2 months, right?
Well, I mean, I asked before her because I wanted to marry her. I mean, I don't understand what fuck the point of engagement is.
Well,
like, that's what dating someone for 3 years.
Well, here's the funny thing about it. You can stop and get too personal. You first tell me, yeah, I'm thinking about getting married. I don't know when I'm going to do it. The next week, you're like, Pat, I got engaged. I'm like, okay. And then you're like, I'm not going to get married. This doesn't happen right away. It can happen years down the line. A month later, it's happening this October. I'm like, all right, let's do it.
You know, I mean, I figured, why the fuck not? And, I mean, her and I are having fun with it. And the whole me dropping hints to you that I was thinking about it was simply just...
To cushion the blow?
No, it was simply my way of, I've been thinking about this for months, and now it's starting to trickle out because I can't contain it anymore, and now I'm just going to ask her. So that's been fun. Other than that, I've just been reading at a steady clip. I finished the first 3 books of the Ring trilogy. There's technically 2 more books after it.
Is that the movie, The Ring?
Yeah, and it's weird because the first book is kind of a creepy horror book. The second one is kind of a medical mystery. And the third one, by the time you get to the third one, it's not a horror series at all. There's nothing really scary. It's interesting, and I'm very happy I read them. So now I'm on the fourth book, which is kind of a... not really a prequel, but it gives more background information into the events that had happened. So that's basically been my life, is reading and wedding planning and... working.
Well, that's good. What's been going on with me? Well, all my DVDs are mailed the hell out.
That's good.
That's fun. It's always fun when you go to the post office and they try to get you not to use their service. You know, I brought like 95 to 100, you know, mailers, you know, all clean labels printed out. And they gave me an attitude for it. And this happened to Billy and Jay in Texas when they're trying to mail their DVDs 2 months back. It's like, do your goddamn job. Shut up and do your job. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Don't tell me, oh, you can do this online. Yeah, I could. You know what, though? You get paid to do this. I know. You want to pay me to do it? That's fine. But I ended up doing that anyway. I ended up using stamps.com for all the international ones because you don't have to fill out the stupid custom forms by hands. Anyway, so if you ordered a DVD, you pre-ordered a DVD, your package is in the mail, all of them, and Volume 3 will be for sale soon on the punkeffect.com store or at Luna Video Games. You could go to the Ocean Beach or La Mesa.
I got a couple dusty copies in the back that I can shake off. Like,
dusty? Shouldn't be that dusty. They're only a month old.
I gave them extra dust. just for the illusion.
You got some Jaramite cards and just went like that to them?
Yep.
Is that what you did?
Yeah.
Other than that, Super Riff Brothers. You're excited. I'm excited. The first episode of Super Riff Brothers is out to, you know, not all positive reviews, but hey, YouTubers aren't used to something like that's like MST3K style. They're used to, you know, fast-paced humor from like Let's Plays where it's just like mile a minute and half it's not funny and half it doesn't make any sense, but that's okay. So we're gonna
be real. Most things on the internet aren't funny.
No, they're not. You don't think my stuff's funny, that's why you don't watch it. But there's gonna be 4 episodes of Super Riff Brothers all for the month of February, basically season 1. After that, we'll see what happens. It might go on, it might not. I might reform it with new group people. We'll see what happens. It's more of an experiment to see how this goes.
Pat's experimenting.
I always experiment. So I went to see a movie. What movie was it? I went to see The Hobbit. And that was 2 weeks ago almost. So that was like January 23rd.
Are you checking a calendar?
I am checking a calendar. I go to see this movie, The Hobbit. And so I get a text from Ryan, who runs Cinemassacre, beforehand. And it just says, he sends me a text. I'll just read the text right now. That he sent me. It was kind of a weird text, especially for he sends me a text.
We are waiting with bated breath.
Well, okay. I don't have the text in front of me right now.
Excellent.
I'm gonna get the text in front of me. Shut up. Shut the hell up, Ian. His text was. Da, 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 da.
This dead silence brought to you by Tecate.
11:27 a.m. Oh, Saturday, January 25th. 11:27 a.m. He texted me, I tested at the movies. What up? Just found out about Justin. Wanted to talk. So I shut my phone off, and I watched The Hobbit, Desolation of Smaug, which was a pretty good movie. It was. I dreaded seeing it. I thought it was going to be a drag, because the first one was kind of drag. It was pretty good. And then I get out of the movie theaters. I'm like, well, I know a couple of Justins. Obviously, I know Juario Justin, and another one maybe randomly. And just said it's found by Justin. I didn't know what he was talking about. I thought maybe Justin joined a new website or whatever else. And he just basically said, Juario shot himself. He's gone. And I was just like, it's a fucking joke? You know, like, is this, like, what's going on? Because, you know, fucking The Hobbit's like 3 hours long. So, like, that's, for the internet world, that's a long amount of time to be away from it. And so I come out. And I'm just looking at my phone, like, what? So I check Twitter, and all of a sudden I see all this stuff posted. Like, rest in peace, Justin. And then Joey gives me a call. Joey Rue, from Clan of the Grey Wolf Retroware. And he's like, yeah, Justin passed away. Are you okay and everything? I miss messages.
I tried calling you, I think, when you were in the theater. I didn't realize we were jumping into this topic immediately.
Well, that's why, you know, I hate to say it was funny, but, you know, that's why I was checking the text. I wanted to give you the backstop, drive how I found out. But, yeah, Justin's gone. I'm not sure. I wrote a little piece on my website about it, and I'm not entirely sure what you could say that everyone else hasn't said, and that's exactly what I wrote about Justin. I've known Justin since late 2010. I remember we talked about it. We weren't exactly sure when exactly it was that I started talking, but it was late 2010, and I forget how. I remember he used to do these live streams two or three times a week for his fans, and he did them for a couple of years, about 2.5 years he did them, and I would join every now and then and be a moderator, and sometimes Skype in with them. And so we met from that. He was familiar with my work, I was familiar with his, from That Guy with the Glasses, because on That Guy with the Glasses, there wasn't really that much video game content, and he was doing import game reviews, which no one really did. So we communicated that way. MAGFest 2011, we kind of met for the first time in person. He interviewed me late 2010 for his stream. We talked for like an hour and a half. And the thing about it, and I posted on my website, is that the thing about Justin, which made him special, is that he always made you feel like you were like part of his inner circle, even if he just met you. And you had just met him at MAGFest for the first time a month ago.
Talk about that.
And you can attest to that. That Justin was he wasn't pretentious at all. There was no sort of reservations about him. I'm a pretty intuitive person when it comes to like personality types, and I know when people are bullshitting. And with Justin, it never really occurred to me to think that, well, is this guy putting on a front or is he fake? He's really a devious person being this nice. No, he was just that nice. There was no facade there about him being, you know, that nice a person. That's who he is. That's who he was. So, I mean, we sort of, you know, in 2011 is when I really hung out with him at MAGFest 2011. I hung out with him a lot at E3 June 2011. And there's a video of that, a part of that online, my E3 coverage. It's like the day three recap part where we kind of got to know each other a little bit. And then he invited, me and Joey and, we went out to the, there's this Asian mall in Little Tokyo with the Japan Arcade. And he showed us that we had Japanese food. We sort of made a tradition after that for the next three MAGFests, 11, 12, and 2013. We would go there the last night, go to the Japan Arcade, and hang out and have fun. And he was hanging out with his friend Mark, who's also known as Psychotaku online, who was one of his best friends.
MAGFests or
E3. We made a tradition at the E3s to go to Japan Arcade. And so we would hang out with Mark, Psychotaku. He would introduce us to his world. And that's who Justin was. He just wanted, through his videos, he wanted to like share his world and share what he loved with everyone and bring him in. And so it's weird because that same Mark, Psychotaku, he texted me. I don't know if I'm giving away too much, but it can segue into, I guess, what the issue is here. Is that like Mark texts me saying like you knew more about what was going on with Justin than most people, which I texted back. I said I don't even know if that's even true because like I mean, I talked to Justin on the phone probably every other month for about a year and a half when I was the director of content for Retroware, which was about a year and a half. That was about early 2012 to mid 2013. And yeah, we talked about a lot of stuff. We talked about what was going on with his life, job stuff, you know, what he had planned. You know, he told me a lot about his Kamen Rider, Famicom Kamen Rider series, which I told you about. You were kind of jealous of that he was making this.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, like a Power Rangers type of show, costume heroes. And he actually asked me to be a part of it. I was flattered. It was like came out of nowhere. I guess because I sort of got him in with the Retroware guys. I helped get him onto Retroware. After he kind of it was well actually he was on Retroware and that got the last for a while and then he was just on Retroware and I helped him get in there, and then he sort of came into the family. I guess the fold. It was really MAGFest 2012. He hung out with everyone at Retroware for the first time and he had a great time with everyone. He was drinking it up. There's tons of pictures online. People are posting all their tribute videos where all of us are like hugging. He's gonna hopefully not give away too much. James Rolfe, who wrote a great piece about Justin, and he never even met Justin. He was even broken up at the news of Justin's death. I totally forgot. I got a bunch of Retroware guys in with James to shoot cameos for his movie, and Justin is going to be in the movie. James on his site said Justin had great comedic timing with his little part he did, and so he's going to probably appear. So I'm kind of rambling. A lot of thoughts coming out, but I don't know if you want to say a little about Justin. You were shaken up probably even more than me. I have a weird way of grieving with things, but if you want to give some thoughts,
I'm not going to say anything really that no one else has said, but yeah I'm going to talk about it because I haven't. I found out about Justin's passing, and it hit me harder than I felt like it had the right to hit me, so I stayed fairly quiet. Said a couple things, and left it at that initially, because I knew we would talk about it eventually.
Sure.
You know, my first time meeting Justin was MAGFest... the most recent one, MAGFest 12, 2014. And what struck me about Justin is what strikes everyone about Justin is that he's very friendly. When we were all hanging out at the Retroware booth, I saw Justin. I looked at him and I thought to myself, I've got to introduce myself to him. You know, just say hi. And Justin, someone who had countless more fans than I did, who had done far more than I ever have on the internet. I mean, I don't do anything really besides this. Came over and introduced himself to me, said he enjoyed what I did, enjoyed the podcast, and went out of his way to introduce himself to me. And I spent the next 4 days talking with Justin quite a bit, and I got along with him very well. And we went to the Screenwave party, and we had some food.
On Friday night.
And we're standing around and we're joking. And he goes, you know, he's like, I could really use your help. He's like, I've got this pub quiz that I'm doing. He's like, and I don't have enough people. He's like, I don't think I've got enough people. He's like, and he's like, I think you're pretty funny and I get along with you. He's like, I know I've just met you, but can I use you as a host? Not a host, but a table captain, basically. I said, yeah, sure, I'd be happy to. So, you know, I went and did it, and that was a marathon. And watching him do that was impressive because it took a lot out of him. And he was just so very thankful that I showed up and that I did that. And I don't know if it was because he didn't know me or if he was just very thankful or what, but he was just words don't really you can't convey how friendly he was. But my favorite moment with Justin was, it was Sunday morning, we were getting ready to leave. I'd been up drinking whiskey and talking life with Billy until from the game chase until probably 7 in the morning.
Wow. Yeah,
7:30 in the morning.
You did tell me about that.
Yeah. And I watched we watched Shane's Home Alone review,
which was pretty good.
It's a good one. And I had, you know, come down, and when I'm nervous around people, I get a little silly. So, you know, I just met all these people at MAGFest, and if I like you and I feel comfortable around you, but I don't know, you're going to get pet names really quick, right? So I walk down to the MAG. I leave the hotel room after you guys do. I get down to the MAG, the Retroware booth before you guys do. And it's just Justin chilling there with some buttons, like pins. I walk around the booth and I say, you know, morning, gorgeous, what's going on? And he laughs and just looks. He's like, I'm just...
He said, hey, gorgeous to you?
No, I said that to him. Oh, okay. I said that to him. And he laughs and he goes, you know, did I give you a button? I said, no.
One of his...
And he gave me one of his little cat girl army buttons. I said, thanks. And he goes, yeah, I noticed you had a lot of buttons on your bag. And I said, I like buttons a lot. I've got some buttons, too. And I gave him some buttons. And I said, I asked him, I said, where did you get your buttons made? He goes, oh, I make them.
Mm-hmm.
I go, really? I said, that's awesome. I said, that's something that I want to get into. And he goes, well, you know, I've got this little button maker here that I bring around with me. He's like, it's not the best quality. He goes, but, you know, there's people who want to say hi to him. It's Sunday morning. We're trying to pack up and go. He goes, let me show you how it works, just so you kind of got an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And he took me aside and he sat me down and he just, without me asking or anything, like it was no skin off his back, sat there and took 10 minutes and showed me all of his cutouts and asked me if I had played, you know, The World Ends With You, which is a DS game that, you know, is well regarded. I didn't. And he was like, I said, but my girlfriend might know it. And I said, these button designs are really cute. And he's like, well, pick a couple for your girlfriend. So I picked, you know, two that I thought Vani would like. And we talked and he showed me how to make it. And he told me all about it. And he left me with, like, something that I gathered that he was really good at that I admire. Because I'm not. I'm long-winded. He's really good at conveying a great amount of information in a short time span. He was just so fluid at getting across the key points to something, which is probably why he did so well with series like Let's Play and... You Can Play This and the one where he made all the different dishes and all that stuff.
Sure.
Because he knows how to deliver this information snappily, but in a way that makes you feel comfortable and welcome.
Sure.
And I remember we packed everything up, and him and I helped Joey get some boxes out to his car. And we said goodbye to Justin. And Justin said goodbye to everyone. He was like asking when he was going to see everyone again next. And he looked at me, and he said, am I going to see you at any future conventions? And I said, I don't know. I said, but I'd like to, you know, hang out with you again if we do. And he said, I'd like that too. And that was the last thing I ever said to Justin. And when I found out, and I'm already getting a little emotional, but when I found out, I cried. And I cried not for the reasons that most people cry when they find that someone they care about has passed. People cry because they think about all the good times in the past and they think about what was taken from them. They think about the history they had with that person. I thought about the history I couldn't.
The history that might have been.
I couldn't have with him. And here's a guy that... For all I know, I could have become close to, like, I liked him, I got along with him, and he's fucking gone, and it sucks. And, look, I'm not going to ramble any longer, and this is kind of jumping things, but I just want to say something real quick. On the internet, a lot of people don't want to attribute his death immediately to things like depression. And I'm not trying to say anything controversial, but a lot of suicides, and I'd wager most, stem from something like depression. And it has a stigma that people can't shake.
Sure.
Look, please, if you don't feel well, if something is wrong, talk to someone. And you don't have to want to take medication. And I'm getting upset about it because this is, believe me, when I say this, this is not an outsider looking in, this is an insider telling you. If you don't want to take medication, worry about it later, go talk to the doctor. Please fucking go talk to the doctor and figure it out from there. But you are going to gain nothing by not making any movement. I don't want to see any more people who I could know die because they could have stopped it.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's that.
Or there's plenty of professionals you can talk to. There's hotlines out there.
More lines, and there's phone numbers everywhere. And Jesus Christ, there's everything in the fucking world available to you. And I cannot blame someone. I don't hold it against them because in that moment you are at your absolute low end. But you got to think it through.
There's lots of numbers out there. There's suicide prevention where people are on call that volunteer their time, that are trained to talk to you if you feel down about whatever. I'm going to go back to the text I got from what I considered one of Justin's best friends, Mark, who lives out in L.A. And again, I don't want to give away too much or whatever's too personal, but Mark didn't even know anything was wrong, and he was one of his closest friends. So that's where, I guess, this is like my dad. My dad is a sort of person where physically or emotionally, which is not healthy, if there's anything wrong with him, he'll keep it in, and he doesn't want to express it to anyone else because he doesn't want to feel like he's a burden to anyone. And I'm guessing that's what Justin was going through. He figured that everyone knows me as this happy-go-lucky guy, and I'm fighting something terrible, this terrible mental disease I'm fighting, and I don't want anyone to know about it. I don't want to burden anyone else with it. And so that's what he held it in, unfortunately, because all it would have taken was, you know, a conversation with me on the phone. Many of the conversations we've had, just someone at MAGFest is reaching out and say, hey, I'm having a tough time. But Justin wasn't the type of person to say that. He wasn't the type of person to say, hey, I'm having a tough time.
So many choose to suffer in silence because they don't want whatever's affecting them to taint other people. Sure. And like I said, and I've been there, you don't say anything because you don't want to drag someone else down. You feel like the mere mention of talking about depression, or you can.
Yeah.
Feel like the mere mention of talking about depression is like communicating a disease.
Sure. Like I said, there's a stigma attached to having depression. Yes. It's seen as a weird thing, and people don't understand mental illnesses. You know. Unfortunately. And that's the thing. I don't know. I haven't broken down about it. I haven't cried about it. Again, like I said, I grieve differently. But what gets me is like reactions like you, reactions like Billy and Jay on their tribute video, when I see how other people are affected by it, that's what gets to me. When my aunt died of she had like a brain tumor and died on the operating table like 6 years ago, it didn't really affect me until I saw my cousin crying, you know, her daughter crying. Didn't hit me. But I look at it as it's weird. I just kind of look at it as it's a tragedy, and it's a waste. I mean, there's so much more Justin obviously could have contributed and given to us that he hadn't already. And so I'm just, I don't know. I feel dejected more than anything. It's like, you know, there was so much more he could have done. He was beloved by his fans. He had such a hardcore group of fans. Going back to that Friday night that you volunteered, and I'm laughing because it's funny how it ended up, at the pub quiz, which I had done last year. You were one of the quote-unquote celebrities at one of the tables
Let me cut in on this. The thing was, you're going in the same direction, but I was there, so I'm just going to say, he asked me to be there because he was nervous about there not being a big enough turnout.
And there was a huge turnout.
So I went, and you know what the problem was? There was way too many fucking people. And it's because he's that popular. Yeah. You know, he was one of those guys who and I don't think he... I don't think it was for show. It wasn't like a. I don't think he really, he did, in the niceness he had towards his fans. But I don't think he really. And like I said, you know, this is coming from a guy who knew him for a short period of time. I don't think he really grasped it. I don't think he really got that he had the popularity that he did, and the popularity that he had, as much as his videos, was his reputation for being so approachable.
No, I think he did it. I don't want to speculate. I think he did appreciate it, but I just think it's one of those weird things that...
I'm not saying he didn't appreciate it, I just don't think he fully grasped it.
He must have, though. He must have. He had the pins, he had the cat girl army thing going on. His fans were always around. I remember the first MAGFest I saw him.
Well, maybe you're right.
He'd always have a group of people, but that's the whole point, is that depression, none of that shit matters.
No, it doesn't.
If you get to the point where a chemical misfires in your complicated brain and misfires, none of that shit matters.
People don't fucking get depression. It's not a thing that is changed by outside forces. Depression is an interior problem. Yeah. And it's inside. It doesn't matter if you're surrounded by fans. It doesn't matter if a plate of your favorite food is in front of you. If your favorite music is playing. None of it matters. It registers. It's just a gray wash of static noise.
Yeah. His last tweet was about our podcast.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago, he was in our chat room. This is the night before he took his own life. He was in our chat room. He asked a question. A CU PodQuest question. I made him a moderator. He asked, Pat, how do you track your game collection? I poked fun at him because I said, hey, you should have been in the chat before. I already answered it. I re-answered it. He laughed in the chat room. I think that night, he also recorded something that was released like 2 or 3 days later. Or before it was released like the day he died, or right after, coincidentally. He recorded something with a guy named Game Jew, who used to be on Screw Attack. He recorded, like, it's called, like, Two Jews Who Love Mario. And it was basically a recap of what he did and almost of his life, like, what he shared. And it was like, it was almost like a tribute to himself that he sang the day before he took his own life. And so I can't picture, that's the thing, like, how do you go from that state of mind Wednesday night where you're fine, and then within 24 hours you're gone. Again, it's something triggered it, and then that was it. You know, and it's, again, it's a shame, and again, it's just like, it's just a waste. It's just, that's the way, unfortunately, I'm going to look at it for a while. If anything can be brought out of this, and I talked to you about this a lot, about this is the first time something like this has happened within the YouTube community of, like, internet reviewers. This is the first time something like this has happened, that I know about, at least, for someone as, I guess, as well-known as Justin was. If there's any positive that can come from this, it's that people are talking about it. People are talking about depression, not to be ashamed of it, to seek out help. Screw Attack did a great thing. They did a live stream last Friday where they took donations for the American Association of Depression and Anxiety. They took donations for that. So people at least are talking about it. I mean, that's a positive. I that's the only positive I see out of it, is that, that people are bringing awareness to it.
Too often in the wake of a tragedy, people say there needs to be a dialogue about things, and there never is. And I just hope that
I've seen
because of this, because this is a smaller community, because that we are, let's not beat around the bush, most of us as video game players doing what we do, we have our own particular mental tics and quirks, and I just hope that the message gets across. Mm-hmm. If you need to talk, there are people out there. Even if it's a shout in the dark, there are people out there. I understand. If there is help if you need it, Justin, goodbye, guy. Let's move on.
Sure, let's do it. Justin, you were a friend. You are gone. I don't know what else to say at this point. All right. Moving on from that topic. Okay, we are back.
All right.
From our short break. We should take more breaks more often, like commercial breaks. We need sponsors, damn it. Sponsor the CU podcast, people. Email me, pat@thepunkeffect.com. If you want to be a sponsor, Takati, if you're out there.
Send me a Gumby. Send me a case of that titanium that's only available in Mexico.
Wristbands available soon. Pat the Inspector wristbands. So
let's move on. And, you know, I feel like we should just kind of maybe get the negative stuff out of the way.
Yeah, get the negative out.
It's not to detract someone's death, but being a celebrity, I feel like this is a little bit easier to talk about. But it is still a massive bummer. Philip Seymour Hoffman passed away this past week with a needle in his arm.
Heroin. Now,
the thing is I believe this is a guy who, and I don't watch a lot of movies. I don't watch a lot of films. But Philip Seymour Hoffman has been an actor that I've followed since probably the mid to late 90s, and I've seen a lot of the things he's been in. Not all of them, but I did make a point of trying to see almost as many films of his as I could.
Sure.
Followed him online. Thought he was an affable guy. Read his interviews. This is a guy who I believe, I could be wrong, I'm pulling this from my head, but I seem to believe it, was a guy who once drank a lot, stopped drinking.
He did.
And as far as I know, never had another drink after that point. Went years. Took up a small recreational opiate use and checked himself in, you know?
Yeah, we discussed this like about a week.
We discussed this the night before he passed away.
And I don't even know how we even brought it up, but we did.
Because you and, I think her name is Private, you and your lady friend had stopped over to my place and we were sitting around chatting and I think we were talking about a movie that we had seen. I think I brought up The Hunger Games because he was in The Hunger Games.
He played one of the bigger guys in The Hunger Games.
Plutarch. And, you know, this is something that I don't know a lot about Vonnie likes, but we went, and when I saw he was in the movie, I fucking marked out, you know? So, anyways, we're talking about this the day before about how he had a heroin opiate problem, and before it had really hit news, basically before anyone could make tabloid headlines out of it, he just checked himself in. He was like, I have a problem.
It was like 4 months ago.
Yeah, and I need to go in. He went through a program, came out, relapsed, the needle was hot, and it killed him. And
yeah, he was arguably the greatest actor of his generation. He was 46. If you want to throw Daniel Day-Lewis in there, who's about 10 years older, but, I mean, he's in the top five easily.
He was a phenomenal character actor. My favorite thing he ever did was when he was Capote. and it's because it's my favorite actor playing my favorite author.
I got to see that. I never actually saw that.
It's fantastic.
That's what I won the Oscar for.
He does really good. You know, he does really good characters. There's a very little known movie he did. It was an indie film. I saw it with a buddy at a tiny little indie house in Buffalo. It was called Owning Mahoney, and it was based on the true story of a guy who basically gambled his life away from Toronto. And you know, gambling not really my thing. Don't care about it. Like, didn't seem like it'd be an interesting movie, but because of the way he portrayed the character, it was fantastic. His turns in I own the DVD, Jesus. Is it 25th Hour? Yeah, 25th Hour.
Oh, he was in that?
He's fantastic.
I'll bring up his IMDb.
Yeah, he was, he was just this guy who had finally gotten to the point where his appearance in something like Mission Impossible 3 or The Hunger Games suddenly gave it just that step above normal blockbuster bullshit status.
And you wanted to see it because he was great in Mission Impossible 3. It was fantastic.
And he was great in The Hunger Games.
In a throwaway villain role, Mission Impossible 3, anyone could have played. He was menacing and he was
He can act
scary.
His ass off. He can he in real life he came across as like one of the friendliest guys you'd ever meet.
And from people Opie and Anthony showed it listening to Opie, who one of the hosts, used to see him around and hung out with him. Jim Norton, who was a comedian, went to Thanksgiving at Louis C.K.'s house. And Philip Seymour Hoffman was there. He said, "Yeah, he was just the nicest guy. He wasn't pretentious. He would talk to you like anyone else."
Yeah, and you know, he could do any role so well. He could do asshole. He could do good guy. He could do everyone. And you know, I'm forgetting even some of the roles that people seem to like him best.
Boogie
for
Nights.
His turn as Lester Bangs in Almost Famous. His character in Boogie Nights. In fucking Big Lebowski.
Brandt in the Big Lebowski. He takes I think he's in like three scenes of the movie at most, and he makes them so great. That's also, you know, due to the directors who are great, but I mean, he just took those small roles and made him as important as he was on the screen that one time. You just wanted to watch him.
So here's the thing about a good actor. 46, you're a baby.
Yeah.
You know, and not to like touch back on things we're talking about, but him being gone at 46, we're robbed of, how many years worth of, you know, decent performances. So
yeah, we're robbed. You're right.
So you're robbed of all these future performances he could do, and it's gonna be hard. Like, you know, Hunger Games 3 comes out or whatever it's called, and Vonnie's gonna want to go see it. Apparently they didn't film those all. I checked. Yeah, so
third one's got to be recast.
Who the fuck are they gonna have to film? I mean, it's ridiculous. So I don't know. And with
let's see what I'm gonna go back to other movies. He was great in Magnolia. I haven't seen Magnolia in probably 12 years, but I know that was a great movie and he was good in it. Talented Mr. Ripley.
Did you ever see Love, Liza?
No, I didn't see that one.
You've never seen. If you want to feel like shit for an hour and a half,
that sounds great.
Well, it's one of the most depressing movies I've ever
watched.
That's
his podcast, by the way, but yeah.
It's him and his girlfriend dies, and he takes up a gas-huffing addiction.
Oh, that sounds great. Jesus Christ.
But he acts it really, really well.
He does.
It's just, it's ridiculous.
Punch Drunk Love, he was the villain in that. He was great, fantastic in that. That's the only Adam Sandler movie I can watch.
That's what I've heard, but I still avoided it because of that.
Paul Thomas Anderson. Along Came Polly, he was the friend in that. You know, even a role like that, just the best friend.
Well, his minor roles, like that's the thing. Yeah. Like so many people do, not to go back on it because it's not even one of my favorite roles of his. But so many people remember him as Lester Bangs in Almost Famous, and Lester Bangs was a real life famous music critic. And
Charlie Wilson's War.
His role was very small in that film.
Doubt, was he nominated for Doubt?
Oh yeah, my grandma loved that movie. My grandma loved Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Pirate Radio was supposed to be a pretty good movie. I never saw it, but that was supposed to be pretty good. Ides of March. So, that was the political movie. Moneyball. The Master was supposed to be.
I need to see the Master.
Paul Thomas Anderson movie.
Need to see the Master.
So I mean, he just picked good. I mean, he would do like Mission Impossible 3 every now and then. He'd do the Ben Stiller movie. He would do the Hunger Games. But he picked a lot. These are tough roles. These are not easy roles he's choosing here.
But he pulled them off amazingly. If you ever want to see someone completely transform their mannerisms, watch Capote, because he's not Philip Seymour Hoffman, but he is, and that's what makes it so great.
Well, according to this, I guess they were filming Hunger Games: Mockingjay, so I don't know what they, if they filmed a lot of him or I don't know.
Well, hopefully. Anyways,
yeah,
you know, drug use, fucking Christ, guys, look, I'm not going to get into a lot of things. There's a line, and heroin is definitely above the fucking line.
Yeah.
Like,
heroin's the type of thing where
someone online said it. I think it was Patton Oswalt, and he made a good point, and I laughed. It was sad, but it was a good point. But he said, if geniuses, like, he's like, if artists,
yeah,
great artists like Joplin and Hendrix and Philip Seymour Hoffman can't handle heroin, here's a tip: you probably can't either. And it's like, that's kind of like the number one. Yeah, don't touch it.
I don't think it's anything where someone's like, yeah, I got a recreational heroin habit.
Yeah.
I don't think you can say that. I don't think it's possible.
No.
It's the type of thing where heroin, you're hooked the first time. The first time you're hooked. And according to what I've heard, what I've looked at, within a month, the thrill is gone. 1 month. After that, it's just, you're doing it so you don't get sick.
Yeah.
Because your body's so used to it. And at that point, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Because withdrawal from that's like the worst freaking thing. That's, you know what I mean? That's why they have, you know, methadone clinics and things like that. Because you can't just go cold turkey on heroin. It's the worst. It's the type of thing you ask even guys like Frank, marijuana, whatever.
I made a joke about, Frank and I joke about marijuana all the time.
Even acid.
Frank and I joke about that shit all the time and talk about it all the time. I made one half-assed joke about heroin like six months ago, and Frank lost it. Woo! Frank lost it. And it wasn't even like a suggestive joke about even doing it. It was just like, that's just a joke. Like fucking heroin. Frank's like, don't fuck around with that. I'm like, okay, Frank, sorry.
Yeah, it's coming from Frank.
Yeah.
Frank's like, don't do drugs. At least that drug.
Yeah, yeah. Know? Don't do that one drug. That one in particular.
You
don't
know?
Fucking touch.
And so, it's the whole thing about being an artist. Like, Hemingway was
a piece of,
miserable.
Whatever.
And then, you know, Edgar Allan Poe, and then everyone, all these brilliant artists, maybe you have to be tortured a little bit to be a great artist. That's what it comes down to. You have to be a little off in order to either pretend you're someone else or write other people. Maybe normal people can't really do that well. That's what it comes down to, you know? That's what you find out. Just about everyone, there's very few of these guys that are brilliant that, you know, look at Beethoven. He was screwed up, wasn't he? Mozart? All these guys were a little bit screwed up, at least, you know? So no recreational heroin, boys and girls. That's not good. And they found it like 70 hit bags in his room too. So it's like, you know, I had heard that he was, you know, pretty clean for a while. Again, I heard from Opie and Anthony that he used to see him at a bar all the time drinking. No, he was just drinking. But supposedly, you know, the reports are that he had been prescribed. He was clean for a long time and prescribed painkillers. And that's what hooked him back.
That's what got him on it. Yeah,
that's what happens.
He found a way that he could justify the high through a prescription, and then when that justifiable way went away, he moved on to the heroin.
Yeah, don't do drugs. Okay, that's all I can say about that. It's a shame he's gone.
Right. Okay.
Great topic. This year rules, doesn't it? Oh, Jesus. Okay, what's next?
Fuck, I don't care. Talk about your fucking shit that has to do with fucking that guy. The people. Jesse Eisenberg is gonna play Lex Luthor in the fucking Superman-Batman movie. Motherfuck. No, here's the thing. This is turning around. This is getting so out of control that they are two bad casting jobs away from making this something I might go see.
Just for the
that I might pirate, because I'm not giving Zack Snyder a fucking dime. That I might pirate just to see, like, how accidentally brilliant it might become.
That it might go do a full circle and come back to being good?
Yeah, like
so fucking off the wall zany that you're like, what is this, art house I'm watching?
Yeah, at this point, it's fucking ridiculous. So it's pushed back. They got... Look, I know Jesse Eisenberg can do a dramatic role. Social Network, which I didn't see, but the awards and the accolades and everything I heard, I believe that he can do that sort of role. He can probably play a dick. But...
He always plays a dick.
It's like Gal Gadot. The look, the physique,
it's just
the aesthetic. You do have to cast to aesthetics sometimes, and that's not fucking fitting the bill.
Well, he's not
to imagine him bald.
What is he even 30, the kid?
No, try to imagine him bald. He's always got the big puffy hair. Now try to imagine him bald.
That's a giant forehead, now I think about it.
Maybe he will make it a perfect. He's going to be a fine Luthor. That's going to be the best thing.
He's going to be a great Lex Luthor.
He's going to be the best Lex
Luthor.
Well,
you always picture Lex Luthor being like a guy in his 40s or something, or 40s, successful. You know, he's a multimillionaire who has his own corporation.
He's a ripped 45-year-old. He's basically the dad from Mallrats, only. He's basically the dad from
he's
Mallrats.
Michael Rooker?
Yeah, he's basically Michael Rooker.
They should have kept Michael Rooker.
Yeah, right, they should have. Michael Rooker 10 years
so
ago.
So, Eisenberg, you think it's them trying to be too. They're trying to be too cute for their own good,
I think they're trying to be. I think they're just trying to appeal too much to the youth. I think they're trying to appeal to the youth. They're trying to get all these people that younger kids know to be in these movies, and I think looks has something to do with it. But I think a lot of it is they're pulling from this weird pool of stars that's going to appeal to like the late teens to early 20s in a hope to make this huge event. When what you need is good actors. You know who's a great actor? Mark Ruffalo. Who played the Hulk really well?
Yeah.
Mark Ruffalo. Is Mark Ruffalo a name that is bandied about teenage fucking let's have a bubble tea circles? No, but you know what? He fit the role well, and the movie was fantastic.
When Robert Downey Jr. was cast, Robert Downey Jr. was the nothing. He was in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which was
He was just coming out of years of fucking...
Yeah, and that's why it was brilliant, because Marvel looked at him from a studio standpoint, and like, this guy can pull it off. He's not a bankable star by any means. He hadn't been in a hit movie in, I don't even know, Chaplin, which was like 15 years before that.
Sure.
You know what I mean? When he got the Oscar.
Yeah.
You know? So, we're going to give it to a guy who was an addict for years and years and years, but they knew he was a great actor.
Right.
And they didn't. They didn't give a shit that he wasn't a household name at the time, and they didn't care that he wasn't a heartthrob. He got the role of Iron Man, he was like 40. You know, way past teeny bopper land. And he did a great job. You know, and DC doesn't, they have their fucking head up their ass. Warner Brothers,
well,
they do.
Listening to you talk, I feel like they're sort of banking on the same thing. Here's some quasi-knowns, and maybe these can be the roles that break them out, but I just feel like they're being horribly miscast. Here's the thing, I have no issues. I mean, they put some good actors in that Drek that I paid money to see.
Guy from Warner SVU in a throw role.
Chris Maloney.
Maloney. Great.
I fucking adore Maloney. But
you adore Maloney.
I adore Maloney. But and you know, I don't like Costner, but Costner was great.
And what's her name as the mom?
Diane Lane. Yeah.
Who Frank always says, like, she's always in a movie, hates her husband and bangs a younger guy. I'm like, well, yeah, she was good in that. You know.
So anyways, I mean. Whatever. No, this movie's going to be bad. It's going to be rough. And
two more casting decisions. What about Jeremy Irons, though? That's a decent choice.
Sure.
But even that's too cute, because Jeremy Irons always, he's just playing the Pope in that series on, Showtime HBO? He's like a snappy, you know, a little sarcastic. And he's going to be, I don't know.
Two bad castings away from something that I might go see. Let's see if it happens.
Let's root for everyone. We should tape it somehow. Reaction.
My money will not go to them.
You're
going to
pirate it?
I will do illegal things.
I'll get it on my cell phone for you. You can watch it on your cell phone.
We'll watch it.
We'll sneak it to the projector booth. You'll get a job just so you can see it for free. You'll go to the local Cineplex, get a job just so you can project that movie the first day and quit.
Two bad castings away. So, anyways. Look, I want to talk about something slightly more positive that's pop culture and comics related. And I know Pat doesn't keep up on this sort of thing, but...
This is where Wirecast comes in handy, so I'm going to go right to your...
some people have said that, you know, they'd like us to talk about comics a bit more beyond this. And so here we go. I'm going to talk about Dread Underbelly, which came out last week. And... it's a big deal for a couple of reasons. One, it's a sequel to the Dread movie, which I know at least you've heard of.
I've heard of it.
It's supposed to be very good, and it is.
Better than the fucking Stallone one.
Oh no, it's fantastic, and you know it didn't do well in theaters because of the stigma associated with the Stallone and the fact that U.S. audiences have no idea who Dread is.
Sure.
Now there's more awareness,
but he's not popular at all here.
Well, he's getting there, but this is where we're getting. This is what I'm getting at. Yeah. So, the campaign starts for sequel, and 2000 AD is like, tell you what, we're gonna write a comic book that's kind of gonna be a direct follow up. So basically, they're going not exactly a direct follow up, but they're gonna write it in the universe of
the movie,
the Dread movie, And they're doing it specifically for the U.S. audience, which is the first time 2000 AD, and they've been around since, I think, 77, has ever made a comic specifically with the American audience in mind. So they got Henry Flint, a veteran Dread artist, on it, who's amazing. I freaking adore him. And then they got Alan Wyatt to do the story. And they released it. And the fucking thing sold out in 48 hours. A Dread comic sold out in 48 hours.
Is it a one-shot?
It was a one-shot. In the U.S., sold out in 48 hours.
Like 100 pages or something?
Nope. Much shorter. I'm going to get into that. This is my problem with it. So, it's insane. That sent a message. DVD and Blu-ray sales have sent a message that people like this movie. They put out the comic. It sells in 48 hours. You know, ask my girlfriend who works at a comic shop, my fiance who works at a comic shop. Anything selling out in 48 hours is pretty fucking big beyond, like, the toppest tier stuff.
Sure.
Problem is, not the best book. Art-wise, it was fantastic because it's Flint. It looks gorgeous. The pages are beautiful to look at. Mm. There's a center scene that's it's a spread that shows Dredd infiltrating, you know, this building, right? And just the way it's drawn from the kind of the top down with, like, the roof cut off is fantastic. It's really cool looking. Problem is if you want to really do a good story arc, especially one that you want to call, like, a follow-up to a movie, you kind of need, like, a four-issue mini. So what we ended up with was something that was really pretty to look at, was almost incomprehensible to read, and not to mention it was also kind of it was basically the same story as the movie. But I think the thing that makes me happy about it, and here's the problem, I can't have any discourse with you on things like the story or anything, but what it did succeed in doing was send a very strong message as to the now popularity of Dredd in the U.S. They're reprinting it on February 11th, and the reprint has already got heavy, heavy pre-orders. So they sold out on the first printing, and the reprint is already highly anticipated.
Wait a minute, so if you were going to discuss it, why didn't you give it to me to read? I could have read it in an hour.
Well, you could have. I didn't think about it until I was at work.
So don't yell at me. Don't yell at me like, yo, you don't read comics.
Well, you don't.
And then bring up a topic. You could have gave me the fucking comic to read.
There's no point in you reading if you haven't seen the movie.
I could have still gave my opinion on if it was well written, if the art was good, if it was worth it for like 30 pages or whatever.
It's pretty.
Don't yell at me, Ian. I'm yelling at you.
I'll yell at you all.
Don't feel ill at me. Don't make me yell at you, Ian. That's what I'm trying to say. Don't make me yell at you.
So I guess my last thing is this. Guys, if you didn't pick it up, if you're interested in Dredd, if you had any interest in it but you couldn't get a copy, they're reprinting it February 11th. No, you are not going to be blown away by the story. There's a lot of holes in it, but it is really pretty to look at. As an art piece, it's nice. Buy it and send the message that Dredd is something that you want to see more of in the U.S.
Is Dredd technically DC? Who is that?
No, Dredd is 2000 AD.
Oh.
British, UK born and bred.
Okay.
Over here, the imprint that prints him is IDW. What? through license of 2000 AD.
Okay. Was ever DC? Ever?
There is, yeah, I mean, because I've got the whole, well, it's all collaboration stuff. Like, I've got the whole, all of the Batman Judge Dredd crossover.
Oh, there was
stuff.
A crossover?
Okay. Yeah, there's Batman Judge Dredd crossovers, there's Judge Dredd Alien, Judge Dredd Predator crossovers, and here's the thing about 2000 AD.
Judge Dredd Alien sounds
Here's the thing
terrible.
About 2000 AD. No, they love this shit. They write it all in as canon into the universe.
Are you serious?
Yes.
The Alien?
Yes, they love it.
Is it
Dredd fighting aliens is canon in the 2000 AD universe. Which is fucking fantastic.
It sounds awful.
No, it's amazing. So, anyways.
I like how there's a versus Predator for everything. There was Batman versus Predator. You know, there's...
Well, I believe there's Dredd versus Aliens versus Predator, and I just finished my run single issues because it just finished coming out of Dredd versus Mars Attacks.
What? he's shooting the cute little aliens?
They're not cute.
With the skull or whatever? Yeah. The little skeleton aliens? Oh, well, you got your comic segment in. We'll have to do it every week. Next week or 2 weeks from now, bring another comic that I could have read in like 20 minutes and complain I don't read any comics. You gave me Infinity Gauntlet Crisis to read. I'm surprised I never read that.
I'm surprised. It's just called Infinity Gauntlet. It's not Infinity Gauntlet Crisis. You're mixing a bunch of comics.
Infinity Gauntlet Crisis sounds better. It sounds more, you know, this is happening.
Gauntlet people. Crisis, colon, Infinity.
It's a crisis.
All right, onwards.
Okay. We are going to discuss next. A lot of good topics this week.
Yeah.
Did you watch the
show? Yeah, fucking heartbreak is a topic that is good.
It is. Well, that's why you got your Takati and we got Gumby being happy, trying to help out. Did you watch the Super Bowl at all?
Fuck no.
No?
No.
It was a terrible Super Bowl.
I wanted Seattle to win, I'm glad they did, but I didn't. I'm glad I didn't watch it.
The game was. People say it was the worst Super Bowl ever. I can't speak to that since there's been 48 Super Bowls.
Oh no,
in the first 30 Super Bowls, most of them are blowouts. People don't realize. Yeah. It's only the past 10 years we've actually been spoiled by all these close games. The three ones that Patriots won were all pretty close. One possession about. The two Giant games were both amazing, fucking amazing games.
I don't have the stats on hand, but I guess the
Pittsburgh games were good.
There are two Super Bowls that are actually worse than the
that you've seen.
No, and just in terms of pure score blowouts, there have been two Super Bowls.
There have been bigger ones. Yeah.
No, there have been two Super Bowls that have been worse than this one. This one is tied for third place with who? The Buffalo Bills and the Dallas Cowboys. So believe me, I know all about Super Bowls like this.
Oh well, yeah,
yeah.
Well, not well. That the one Buffalo one against the Giants was close. What was that, 1 point loss?
Hand grenades and horseshoes, my friend. Hand grenades and
horseshoes. Was it 2019? I think it was.
Yeah.
It's wide right! Giants win! Giants win! Oh, I remember my dad yelling and screaming in the other room. Ah, oh, Lawrence Taylor. Greatest defensive player ever. Anyway, so the game was terrible. Peyton Manning played awfully. I know this isn't really a sports podcast, but I like Peyton Manning.
No, see, here's the thing. Like, I want Seattle to win, but I love Peyton Manning.
He's a great guy, great family.
The 5 years that I spent, like, really into football, in, like, the early 2000s, I always rooted for the Eagles, but Manning was my quarterback. Like, that was my secondary team. And, yeah, I was bummed that it was... I wanted the Seattle to win, but I was bummed that it was such a blowout just because I like Peyton Manning.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I mean, he's a good guy. His stupid little mouth-breathing brother Eli is the opposite. Eli is terrible during the regular season, but he's amazing in the playoffs. He's the most clutch quarterback. And now he's more successful than his brother.
Yeah.
He's 2-0 in two of the most amazing, especially the first one, the most amazing game ever, the biggest underdogs ever in a Super Bowl.
Well, I believe Peyton now holds the record for most postseason losses.
That's rough.
Yeah.
Well, he's get spanked by the Patriots.
Him
all the time.
And Marino. Yeah, I know. It's either him or Marino hold like the record for most postseason losses at this point.
That's sad. And he's 1-2. And the one Super Bowl he won was against Chicago and Rex Grossman in a terrible Super Bowl. That was actually not a good Super Bowl. That was rainy. And Rex Grossman is like, you know, I can play better than him. You know, and that was a terrible Super Bowl. And that's his. So now Eli is the more successful Manning, which is funny. No one in a million years. He's still a Hall of Famer, Peyton. His regular season stats are like insanely good, obviously. Yeah. But this could be it for him. And Eli might have another Super Bowl in him. You know, so that's the weird part about it.
Peyton's getting older. Eli's still got a handful of years.
He's got like 5 years left at least. He's only 32. Eli? He's only 32, Eli.
Oh, Eli's got, yeah. He's that's got what I'm saying. I'm saying Peyton doesn't.
Peyton's done.
Yeah.
Peyton, I don't know if he can recover for this. I mean, I know he had an amazing season, but from the first, I don't know if you watched the stats, but the first play of the game was a safety.
Yeah.
Peyton was trying to call an audible, which he always does because he's very smart about trying to pick out the defense. He starts stepping up. The guy hikes to him as if a shot goes over his shoulder. It was the most nut. After that, the game was over. It was really over at the beginning of the second half. They go to kick it off, and they're afraid of the Seattle guy running it back. Who's not as dangerous as Hester on Chicago. If you know anything about sports, like Hester is the most runbacks of like anyone ever. Mm-hmm. So they do a pop-up kickoff to start the second half, afraid of him. The ball bounces like on the 10-yard line straight up. And you do a pop-up to give your players more time to get down to tackle.
Yes.
It backfired, though. It popped up in the middle of the field right in the guy. He broke like one tackle right through everyone, and it was gone. And then the game was really over in the second half. However, highlights... Bruno Kirby was excellent. Halftime show, he was outstanding. I'm like, wow, this
Bruno
guy's
who?
Is it Bruno Kirby?
Mars.
Bruno Mars. Who's Bruno Kirby? That's
I don't
an actor.
Know.
Bruno Kirby. Bruno Kirby's an actor that died 3 years ago.
It's Bruno Mars.
Not Bruno Kirby. Sorry. Bruno Kirby was the actor in Godfather 2 who played the young. Clemenza.
Yeah, I didn't watch. I didn't watch it. I didn't watch any of the halftime show. I will comment on this though, and I don't even like the band. I fucking hate the band. But well,
they performed well. They performed live.
I'm talking about Red Hot Chili Peppers. Oh, everyone, yeah. all the boo, they didn't play. It's like, of course not. It's a fucking halftime show. They have 3 minutes to set that shit up. You think they're gonna do a sound check and plug something in? You're an idiot.
Well, they have to rehearse it at least for the band that's actually playing.
And they play notes. They play the notes on the recording that goes out, and they always have the vocalist sing. Like it's when how is this any different from any other halftime show? It's not.
That's true. Well, McCartney did do his own. Well, McCartney I think played at least piano. That's different. Piano's the easiest one instrument to to, you know, mix easily.
But... yeah, but when you're running guitars and bass and drums through a mixing boarding edit, no, you don't have time for that. They have to, I read the stat, they have to set up in like, it's something like 3.5 minutes or something like that. You can't do that with a live band like that. You can't.
So, Bruno Kirby, Bruno Mars.
Bruno Mars.
Frank would love that mix up, Bruno Kirby. Bruno Kirby's a famous actor. Anyway. Bruno Mars, he did well. He had some James Brown moves going on. He had the coif going on. The commercials were mostly terrible. And usually they're not great, but there's like maybe one commercial I remember. It was like a 2-part 4 commercial with Rob Riggle starring in it saying, this is a 4 commercial and it's going to be pretty good, but it's going to be even better later. We're going to do something we never did before. So it's like cool stuff happening, you know, whatever. It goes, it stops. Next commercial comes back. It's James Franco as Rob Riggles. Hi, I'm Rob Riggles. And so everything is bigger. There's a tiger there running around. It ends up with them in like F-16 shooting stuff. All I know is we have enough cars. Every other commercial was for cars. Right. I know car sales are really down because the economy's still shit. Enough with the new car commercials. Is there anyone besides the Anchorman sponsors, is there anyone that's going out and buying a car because of the commercial? Is there anyone that's ever done that? That's what I want to know. Is there anyone that's seen a cool CG commercial and say, I want to buy that SUV. I want to buy that sports utility vehicle. I want to buy that luxury sedan. I don't think so.
Yeah, but I wonder that all the time about all commercials.
I know it's more also about brand recognition and remembrance. That's a lot of what advertising is. But I don't remember the freaking... There's literally 20 different car commercials. I'm not going to remember them. I don't remember them. I don't. I remember the cool Doritos commercials they have each year. You know, this year it was a creepy little... It was like a little baby like riding on a dog or something. It was bizarre. I think people complained about that. People complained about Scarlett Johansson and the Soda Stream for Palestinian-Israeli political reasons. I had no idea. That was a big controversy, but apparently it was. You know, that's the stuff you hear about, is stuff like that. Anyway, that's the Super Bowl for you. Terrible game.
Fuck that shit.
Giants rule. Moving on. Let's talk about...
sex, baby.
What? Are you coming on to me, Ian?
Let's talk about you and me.
Let's tweet this out. I think we went through most of our topics. Except for another big one. Wrestling.
All right. Yeah, we gotta do that.
What?
No, you're right. I was trying to
remember. It's very important what's going on right now.
It is. You know more about what's currently going on with the product, but I can at least chime in with
it. Oh, yeah, you can chime in.
I've watched for years. I watched for years. Where in time is common San Diego?
That can't you be? That was never a show. That would have been a good show.
That would have been.
Okay. The one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year, it used to be the second or third biggest. It's still probably this. Technically, in terms of buy rate, it's the second biggest pay-per-view of the year.
What, the Rumble?
Royal Rumble.
Right, because it sets up everything for WrestleMania. Well, it sets up for WrestleMania, but the Rumble used to be something that people really wanted to see.
I still want to see it. I watched the Royal Rumble. The Royal Rumble match, if you're not a wrestling fan... It started out as 20 people. Now it's 30 wrestlers. I think for one year they might have done 40 or 45.
Timed entrance.
It's a battle royale, except a battle royale usually starts with all the entrants, all the wrestlers in the ring, and the winner is the last one who is not thrown over the top rope. In the Royal Rumble, it was brilliant. The first year, I think, was 88. Hacksaw Jim Duggan won it. You start with only 2 guys in the ring instead of having a bunch. They basically reversed it, which was brilliant, simple brilliant. Then every 2 or 3 minutes, I think now it's 2, it used to be 3.
It's 2.
A new wrestler comes into the ring. Then every 2 minutes, another one comes. So until it fills up, and then at the end of 30 guys, whoever's left in there, you throw them on the top rope, you win. And for the past, I believe it's been past 16 or so years, the winner of the Royal Rumble goes on to headline WrestleMania and go against the champion at the time. They've been doing that since about 94, I believe. 93, something like that.
It's always fun how they set it up too, because you know, there's always the hope for the hot shot who can make it, you know, make the run from early on, and then there's always the guy who comes in last.
So there's a guy who's in the long time guy who's in there forever,
right? So yeah. You know, it's really fun to watch, because when you're watching a good Rumble or any other Royale that bites that style, there's a lot of psychology and storytelling told just based on the entrance times and how popular a wrestler is at that time. So, anyway, continue. This year, everyone was hoping to see Daniel Bryan.
Well, I don't know if people are hearing us. It's black right now on the podcast. We're back here. Okay. So, we brought this up on, I think, the last podcast when we were talking about wrestlers. right now, our neighbor in PB, Bryan Danielson, known as Daniel Bryan in the wrestling world, is probably the most popular wrestler since arguably The Rock, when The Rock was around. Because The Rock was a little bit after when Stone Cold left in like 2003.
Good old American Dragon.
Either way, he's the most popular wrestler they've had in the last 10 years. Easily. John Cena was popular, yeah, but half the audience hates him and half love him. Daniel Bryan is beloved by everyone. He's beloved by the quote-unquote smarks, you know?
Yeah, smart marks.
Smart marks who follow everything behind the scene
but
online.
But love themselves get swept up.
But can still get swept up in it. He's beloved by the kids because he's this little underdog. He's only like 5'6", about. You know, he doesn't look like the regular wrestler. He's got a big beard.
He's shorter
now.
Than me.
He's short. I saw him. Yeah. He's really short. He's like he's like 6 inches shorter than his beautiful girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know. And he is a fantastic wrestler, a fantastic worker.
All around nice guy from what I've heard.
He wished me a happy birthday last year when I saw him on my birthday. That was like the coolest thing. After I told him it was my birthday, but whatever.
And he was confused.
He was confused. But it was nice. He could have killed me. He could have put me in a submission hole.
Yeah.
He could have put me in a bow and arrow.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he's a great worker. He's a nice guy. He doesn't do drugs. He doesn't drink. He's clean. He built himself up from the indies. And so he created his own.
Daniel Bryan.
He has the most popular catchphrase in 10 years with the yes, yes. And the whole crowd does it. And it's incredible. So he got a World Heavyweight Championship run like 2 years ago. And then he got beat by Sheamus in 18 seconds at WrestleMania when he was a heel. Where he barely gets in the ring, gets kicked, and he loses his title. Then he turns face. He has AJ Lee, who was a crazy psychotic girl at the time, who still, I guess, technically is in the storylines. And then they separate, now he's a face. He tagged team with Kane last year and was hysterical.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen him as a heel, because when I knew him as a wrestler, he was not a heel. He was always a face. American Dragon was always a face, and I never knew him as a heel. I honestly have doubts that he could pull it off convincingly, but you'd probably know better than I.
I wasn't watching, like, he was more the SmackDown guy, and I wasn't watching a lot, but he was like the bratty, whiny sort of
champion. Oh, okay, yeah, sure, I could see that.
It worked out well, but he can always wrestle. They always push him as being known for a guy who had a ton of submission holds, and he's a great worker. So basically, the past year, his popularity has been growing. They've had him wrestle. This is multiple Raws, wrestle 2 or 3 matches in one night. He had one Raw where he wrestled the last, like, 40 minutes of the show, 3 matches in a row. And wrestled the hell out of him.
What was the storyline for that?
It was like, you know, one guy from a tag team or stable, then the other one. I forget exactly the circumstance, because he's done it multiple times. Or he'll do it where he'll do a tag match or a singles match and do the other one for the main event. They've done that multiple times. They've done a lot where he's taken on handicap matches. Handicap matches... you didn't see for like 15 years. Now there's a handicap match every other week, you know, in wrestling. The past 2 or 3 years, they brought handicap matches back.
I hate handicap matches.
They can work. The whole point is he's worked his ass off.
Right.
And he's done it all himself. And he built himself up. But in the fall, they try to tear him down, both in storyline-wise and for real, which they ended up doing brilliantly. The crowd was so hot for him around SummerSlam last year and afterwards to get the title. And so they did it where, like, corporate Triple H and Stephanie are running the corporation. They are the cult of the authority, and they say, "Oh, Daniel Bryan, you're a B+ player, not an A player. We should bring back the Cruiserweight Championship or the European Championship." And they said this. They said this on screen, but that's really kind of what was going on behind the scenes, because they would only give him a sniff of the title. They had him win the title twice, and then they took it away from a technicality, or they said he was in cahoots.
Let me interrupt here, because I think you're going to touch on it later. And this is someone who has not watched the WWE product in this time span. This sounds like what happened when WCW fell apart, where yes. Backroom politics started becoming center ring storylines. Yes.
Okay. So that's what happened. So he did get the WWE championship, but for like a week. And then they said they took it away. One time they took it away the next day after a huge win. He first beat John Cena. He beat John Cena. John Cena
cleanly
at SummerSlam, which people were shocked. But John Cena had an injury, to his credit. John Cena is a guy that can almost call his own shots. He's been wrestling now for over 10 years. He's the biggest moneymaker. So anyway.
I stopped completely when, like, he was a new guy who no one knew the name.
Thugonomics, John Cena. Anyway, yeah. So he wins a title. He holds it until the next pay-per-view. He gets screwed over in a storyline where Shawn Michaels, who was his real-life mentor, taught him how to wrestle, like super kicks him, and then he loses the title that way. There was one where, oh, he lost it to Randy Orton, where Triple H is a guest referee, pretends he's on Daniel Bryan's side, pedigrees him as special guest referee. Orton has the Money in the Bank, cashes it in, becomes champion. So he was champion twice in the fall, but the runs were meaningless. One was like 1 month, one was one night until the next Raw, where they said, whoa, you were in cahoots with the referee, we're taking it away. So you're thinking, okay, this is bad because the guy everyone's hot for, he's had the championship taken away quickly, which is what you don't want. You want the chase, yes. So they're thinking, okay, maybe we're going to chase it again. So then what happens is he gets into this feud with the Wyatt family. And the Wyatt family is three guys, and one of the guys was a guy named Husky Harris, who's actually Mike Rotunda's IRS's son in real life, who's a great character.
I've heard they're actually pretty good wrestlers. They are good. A couple of them, yeah.
All three of them are good. Two big lumbering guys are actually move well. And then Bray Wyatt, who's like this cult leader character, who is almost like Waylon Mercy a little bit, if you remember him from the mid-90s, mixed with like Jake the Snake.
Okay.
But he's a cult leader. So they have a storyline where they're beating up Daniel Bryan every week. They're beating him up every week. And no one's doing anything to stop him. They're ganging up on him. They're having handicap matches. Another Raw where they had like, he has to beat both guys to get to Bray Wyatt. So he beats both in good matches or whatever, gets to Bray Wyatt. And then they beat him down anyway. So he turns heel for two or three weeks. It's bizarre. They turn him heel for only 3 weeks. They hot shot it, where they say, "Oh, Daniel Bryan is now in the family as the fourth Wyatt member."
So basically, he was beaten down, broken down, and then brought into the family. The cult. Okay.
Even then, the crowd doesn't know what to do. They're cheering for him, and it's unclear if even the writers know what the hell they're doing with this, because obviously. It's unclear if they turned him to get the fans to stop cheering for him because they know he's the most popular wrestler.
Right.
Or if they're actually going somewhere with
him. If they're building something. Right.
So, even between one pay-per-view, it didn't even last a pay-per-view. It was 3 weeks. He wrestles in tag teams and he's beating the shit out of the faces like Kofi Kingston. He's like really beating them and he's helping and he's saying, you know, oh, I want to be part of the family. I want to teach you guys. And even the announcers are putting over the fact, wow, well, Daniel Bryan in this stable, they're unstoppable. So then it gets to the thing where they set up a cage match with two other guys. And it's going to be Bray Wyatt, who's the head of the Wyatt family, teaming with Daniel Bryan against two guys. I totally forget. It happened like six weeks ago. So they get him in the steel cage. It was the Usos. The Usos, which is a Pacific team. They're all related to each other. You know, they're a good, pretty good tag team. They're like in their mid to late 20s. Against the Usos. The Usos end up winning. It looks like Daniel Bryan let him win. The cage is still locked. With the cage locked in, within 3 weeks, he goes from turning heel to face again. He finally has Bray Wyatt where he wants him, beats the ever-living shit out of Bray Wyatt in the cage. The other two guys can't get in the cage. They're climbing. Daniel Bryan throws Bray Wyatt into the cage to knock him back. It was great.
That's a tactic that I'm okay with. I just don't know if I like it in that context. There have been plenty of times, if you look at wrestling storyline history, where someone goes heel for like 2 or 3 weeks or goes face for 2 or 3 weeks just to have that, just to give some impact to the fact that they are really heel or they are really face. Yeah. You know, it really builds you up as like a super heel or a super face.
It rebuilt them. But the point was, it's like 3 weeks. And that's what I told you about. The end of that was Bray Wyatt laid out. Daniel Bryan climbs to the top of the cage. Yes. And literally, honestly, 95% of the 1,000 people were doing that with him. I have not seen a reaction like that in wrestling probably since something with The Rock or Stone Cold from the early 2000s. You know, like, it's been that long.
Here's the thing. I wish WWE could have seen that and been like, oh, that's talent and popularity.
At the same
time. They didn't. So I wish they would have seen it. And been like, oh, that's dollar signs. But somehow they didn't fucking see that either.
So this is like 3 weeks before Royal Rumble.
Right.
About. So you figure, okay, with this storyline then, this would be perfect. You put Daniel Bryan in the Rumble. The quote-unquote, you know, the authority hates Daniel Bryan. So that'll work out well with that angle. The Wyatts hate Daniel Bryan. They'll try to stop him in the Rumble.
So you put Bryan, you put Bryan in like in the first
one or ten, two or
first
ten.
Five, yeah. And then you put the Wyatts in at the last. Like
you can have the authority say Triple H hates him, says he's a B+ player, doesn't want him to be champion, strip him of the title twice. You can say I'll put you, fine, you want to be the Rumble, Daniel Bryan? I'll put you number one. But now you got the Wyatts, at numbers two, three, and four, or whatever.
Or the Wyatts, or the Wyatts even worse at like
27, 28, 29,
yeah.
And he has to fight him out. Writes itself. It's brilliant. So, but this is what they do. This is what they do. This is great. They set up a match, Bray Wyatt versus Daniel Bryan for the Rumble. Okay, there's guys that have wrestled a match then and then the Rumble. It's the second or first match of the night. It's like the match of the night. It's a brilliant match from what I hear.
First match. I heard it's very good.
I've seen parts of it. I saw parts of it. I didn't see the whole thing. Great match. Bryan actually loses the match. Yes. He loses it fairly cleanly.
Yep.
Which is fine. If it's a great match, he can come back for the Rumble. Here's the problem. He wasn't in the Royal Rumble.
Yeah. And I feel bad for poor Rey Mysterio.
I'll get to that. So here's what happens then. They did the old school. Actually, the old school thing was they hadn't done it forever, where they had all the like 15 promos, 30 seconds each, before saying, "I'm going to be the Rumble, I'm going to win." You know, they hadn't done that in forever, which is really cool. So, the Rumble comes, and then you had the first couple of guys. CM Punk, I think, was number one or two, and CM Punk was in the match for like 50 minutes. He was like the Iron Man that year.
He was in the final four.
He's actually in the final four. Before that bullshit ending, I'll get to. The bullshit thing that always pisses off people that watch wrestling and me. How he got eliminated. So, people are chanting for Daniel Bryan throughout the Rumble. Thinking he's going to come out. Couple surprises. They had Kevin Nash come in, who looked decent. He actually was in as Diesel, I believe, 2 years ago. Or three years ago. Three years ago, he was in as Diesel. People went, that's fine. JBL gets up to the announce table to go in, and he gets thrown out real quickly. That was a waste. The problem is, once you got the number like 20 or 22... You figure Daniel Bryan's got to come into this match.
Yeah.
He's due. But the problem was, they already told you who was left. So you had the returning Dave Bautista, who I'll get into. He hadn't been around since 2010. The big muscle-bound guy was going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy. He was returning to the Rumble. You had guys like Alberto Del Rio, you knew was coming back in there. You had, you know, Mysterio was coming out. You knew about five or six guys were coming out. The audience in their head as 22, 23, 24, 25 come out, and Daniel Bryan's not part of that. Something started to happen with the crowd. They started to realize something was wrong.
Yeah, I heard the crowd turn heavily at that point.
They started to realize something was very, very wrong. Even in their heads, like, okay, I know Mysterio's left, I know Batista's left. Where's Daniel Bryan?
Yeah.
So, Batista comes out at number 27, and 27's won like half the Rumbles or something. And the reason they do that is because Batista hasn't wrestled in 4 years.
Yeah.
And even when he did that, he wasn't in the best ring shape.
No.
You know, because he's just a big muscle bound 6'4", 6'5" guy. He comes in, whatever, he beats up guys.
Arguably in his prime, he was better than someone like Nash, but he's still
not by much.
But he's still just a muscle bomber.
Couple
slams.
Muscle
whatever.
Bound guy who gassed easily, was injury prone. And that's what he was. And now he's a guy over 40 years old.
I've almost forgotten we're having a podcast, so we should probably pull this one.
No, this is great. This is
conversational.
So basically, what happens is, Batista comes in, crowd actually boos him. They actually boo him.
Yes, good. I didn't know that.
They weren't... it wasn't heavy. It'll get better. Mysterio comes in at number... 30.
But here's the thing. I feel bad for Mysterio. They booed the shit out of him.
They booed little Rey Mysterio Jr., who has always been a face his entire career.
He's always been a fan favorite. I think even Mysterio understood it, and the crowd did it for the same reason. They weren't booing him because they don't like Rey Mysterio.
They were booing the
company. They were booing the lack of Daniel Bryan. They were booing the company. Anyone in that spot other than Daniel Bryan would have been booed.
They actually cheered Mysterio got thrown out of the Rumble. That's how pissed they were. They were pissed.
Oh, yeah.
And so the final four were returning Sheamus, who's a muscle-bound guy but actually can wrestle.
I don't like his character, but Sheamus Sheamus can work.
Sheamus, a Batista who did absolutely nothing in the Rumble. He maybe eliminated one or two guys. The favorite at the time, who was like number one or two or three, CM Punk, who now the crowd was heavily behind. And the fourth guy, Roman Reigns, who is actually The Rock's cousin, who's a member of the Shield, who's a heel faction. But Reigns is a guy they built up in Survivor Series. He's like 6'5". He's muscular. He has the look, though. He has the look and the charisma. He eliminated the entire other team at the Survivor Series about using the spear, which had never been done before. He threw out the most
Survivor Series is fun.
He threw out the most guys ever at this Rumble. He beat Kane's record of 11. He threw out 12 guys at this Rumble.
Oh, wow.
So those are your final four. That's a decent final four, even without Daniel Bryan. Corporate Kane, who's turned corporate, got rid of the mask, working for Stephanie and Triple H, comes down. CM Punk's in the corner as all four ready to face off. Takes CM Punk out of the match. Crowd did not like that either, because he was the only good worker left in the match.
Because when are they going to learn that interference like that is good?
They do it every year now.
Once in a while.
They do it every year now.
Once in a while. Right, right. You can't do that every year. That's something
A guy who's not in the Rumble or a guy's been eliminated. Even a guy who gets eliminated makes sense. This guy was in the Rumble.
If he was eliminated, that's one thing. But still, like, you've got to use that shit sparingly.
Yeah. So now it's Sheamus, who's returning after, I don't know, I think it's like 6 months, 7 months. He had a muscle tear. But at least he's a wrestler.
Right.
He's been a champion. He can work. Dave Bautista, who's supposed to be a face, has been out of the company for 4 years that no one's cheered for. No one cheered for him on the Raw before that when he came back a couple weeks ago. And Roman Reigns, who's supposed to be a heel that they built up. So what happens is Sheamus gets eliminated. I forget how. They're left with Roman Reigns, who's only been in the company for a year and a half. Not even a year and a half. And Bautista, who's returned after 4 years. Those are your final two. The crowd turned on Bautista and was rooting for the heel, Roman Reigns. I was rooting for Roman Reigns, even though I knew he was not going to win.
What did Bautista win with? Well, a top rope. Yeah, but I mean,
this is what happened.
Rope, but what
this is what happened? Reigns has a setup move called a Superman Punch, which is good. Superman Punch in mixed martial arts is an actual move where you jump and punch. Roman Reigns is the first person to add it. Roman Reigns is a cool though. He puts his fist on the ground, like Superman in the movie, comes up and then hits you. He does a setup. So I think he did that. And Roman Reigns has a spear. Bautista has a spear too. Bautista had a spear that was like his special move, but not his finisher. The Bautista bomb was. They spear each other. Reigns spears Bautista. Or Bautista, I think, speared Reigns. Reigns just goes to throw him out by head. Simple reversal. Bautista throws him out and wins the Rumble in the worst fashion. And Bautista hadn't even done shit that Rumble. He threw out maybe like two people and was most of the time in the corner, gassed, not doing anything. So the crowd turns on this as if their mothers got kicked in the taint.
I love it when there's such a huge difference, and you can hear it in the tone. There's a huge difference between boos
because for a heel.
For a heel, and boos because
this is bullshit.
The company fucked up.
Yes. So the crowd booed heavily. There were just like Daniel Bryan chants all throughout the Royal Rumble, thinking he was going to be in it. The next night, they try to save it with Daniel Bryan coming out to Triple H saying, "You wouldn't have me in the Rumble," which was totally in response to the night before. They hadn't planned that. So this is where it gets... You think this is bad?
This is where my knowledge ends, because at this point, I don't know what happens. Now, I don't know what happens after this. I just heard that most people are hoping for they would save it on Raw.
I went on Twitter and said it was bullshit, and I never tweet about wrestling.
So what happens on Raw?
Mick Foley went online and spoke out against it.
He said he was going to throw a brick through his TV.
And then he did it.
He did it.
Mick Foley commented how this was bullshit. This was Daniel Bryan's year. So then what happened was...
his kids was like, "You know what? We'll buy another one tomorrow, but I said something that I would do, and I'm going to do it."
So in between, I didn't realize this. I was like, "Huh, CM Punk's not on Raw today." I'm like, "That's kind of strange. He's like the number two face in the company." Even if Daniel Bryan's number one, or Cena's one, Daniel Bryan's two, CM Punk is third, and he was champion for 400 days, over last year when he lost to The Rock. CM Punk was on a roll. I'm like, that's kind of weird. I didn't realize it. I went online to look at some of the results. CM Punk quit the company.
Yeah, that I know.
CM Punk quit the company a week ago, a week and a half ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Not storyline.
No, he quit. Real.
He quit. He had enough. He had enough because he was tired of the direction of the company. He was burnt out. Yeah, he quit because of Daniel Bryan being...
It was solidarity for a buddy.
It was.
Here's the thing. Daniel Bryan and him came up in the same circles. I've seen CM Punk wrestle in the same ROH rings that I saw Daniel Bryan wrestling. Like, they know each other. And I hate to say it because, like, a lot of times I don't like the atmosphere of stuff like ROH, but...
Ring of Honor?
Yeah, but those guys, they do come up together, and they do have respect for each other, and they do have each other's backs, which is something I like that you don't see in WWE or WWF. So even though, there's good matches in ROH, there definitely is. I don't know, nothing about it's ever hooked me. I do appreciate the fact that they all, heel or face in the storyline, they all are like with each other as a unit.
That's cool. So this is the problem now. You can't have one of your most popular wrestlers, CM Punk, arguably, he's in the top three.
I heard Vince wants him back, but Triple H doesn't.
Well, I'll get to that. I don't want to get too behind the scenes with that stuff. I guess I'll have to. So he walked out also because Triple H wanted to face, or he was set to face Triple H at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And CM Punk said that's bullshit. He said, yeah. I've been screwed out of the main event the past 3 years. Rock main evented two in a row, walked back 2 years in a row. Main evented 2 years back against John Cena as just a regular match. And then last year for the championship, when he was champion, when Rock won the championship, main evented again. And last year, CM Punk faced Undertaker, which is an honor to face Undertaker, and lost him in supposedly a really good match, which I didn't see. But he did get screwed. Yeah. He wasn't in the main event. He lost the title for last year, and then the main event before that, he wasn't in the main event as a champion. At that point, he'd been champion for like 5-6 months and still wasn't in the main event of WrestleMania. It was The Rock and Cena, and it was bullshit that all these part-timers, and The Rock's a big movie star, but it's still bullshit that you have these part-timers coming back, and then all of a sudden they're in the main event. And they're not even no longer the best workers. And all the guys who've been on the road for 300 days a year, they're out of their spot. And yeah, it is bullshit.
It is. And the thing is, I like The Rock. I thought he was
The Rock at least can wrestle. Batista can't wrestle. Right,
The Rock can wrestle, and The Rock had charisma. So I like The Rock. But it's still bullshit to give someone who has minimal interaction with the company the big spot. Like, the people who have been working for it all year should take it.
Yeah, and Batista can't even wrestle. And he was boring 5 years ago. He wasn't interesting. And so who? I don't care he's in a Marvel movie. That has nothing to do with the wrestling, your business. People aren't going to know about that he's going to be in the movie for like 6 months anyway.
People are assuming there's going to be some sort of crossover appeal there that isn't there. There isn't. He's going to get booed as being an asshole who took a spot that someone else should have had, regardless, because the people who are watching wrestling aren't thinking about the fact that he's in this new movie that they want to go see.
Batista also tweeted when he came back. Because in storyline wise, Del Rio is pissed. Alberto Del Rio, who's been champion a couple times, he comes back and he's pissed at Batista stealing quote unquote a spotlight. Batista actually tweeted out, I think he had it deleted or tweeted out, "Hey, I'm returning at a time where it's a C-list stars in a B-list time period for WWE." He actually tweeted that, insulting the entire roster. Oh, and then he still gets a spot. He still comes back to the Rumble, gets booed. He's going to be main eventing WrestleMania. It should have been Daniel Bryan winning the Rumble, Daniel Bryan winning WrestleMania. If WrestleMania, it's already the whole storybook ending. If they had Chris Benoit win the Rumble and then WrestleMania.
Chris Benoit?
Yeah. If they had him do that, and Benoit at the time in 2000.
Chris Benoit.
Chris Benoit won the Rumble 2004 in WrestleMania. Yes. What I'm saying is, if they gave him the chance to do that, and he was semi-popular. They built him up well in between the Rumble and that as the underdog. But the point is, Daniel Bryan is hugely popular, and they're not giving him that shot, that even chance to shine as the face of the company after Cena's been the face of the company for like 9 years. What the fuck are they doing? Just what are they doing? They always say, well, our wrestlers have to build themselves up, and they gotta grab that brass ring and do all that. Well, these are our wrestlers. CM Punk built himself up in WWE after getting buried. Daniel Bryan built himself up, and now they don't get the shot. So now, even if they, I think what they're gonna do is this. I think what they're gonna do is they have the Elimination Chamber match coming up. I think what they're gonna have is Orton or Batista win it there, or do no, they're gonna have someone else win the title, or Orton's gonna keep it. So Batista will still be in the main event. They'll somehow add Daniel Bryan as a triple threat, which is gonna still tarnish it though, because he should have won the Rumble. He should have been in at number one or number two or number 10 and won the Rumble.
If he gets the shot, I don't care. What I need to see is a one-on-one. I don't need to see a triple threat.
Triple threats are cheap. Triple threats are cheap unless you beat the champion. And fortunately, 10 years ago, which I saw in person, Benoit did beat Triple H and not Shawn Michaels and got the championship.
Yeah.
But Benoit won the Rumble at number two. Bryan was never given that, and the fans wanted to see Bryan, little 5'6" Daniel Bryan, tear through everyone else like a buzzsaw and come out the champion, and they totally screwed it. And what makes it worse is that they're launching the WWE Network in like 3 weeks. So they pissed off a good chunk of their fan base before the launch of the network.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if they find a way to fix it between then and now, but they won't.
Who knows? I mean, they've totally shot themselves in the foot before. So CM Punk leaves.
I just hope they feel like they're up against the wall.
CM Punk leaves because of Daniel Bryan getting screwed over, and he feels he's gotten screwed over himself. And he even said, I like Dave Bautista. He actually said it at, he actually ruined 2 days before, he was in like Wizard World or whatever, at some sort of comic convention, I think in Portland.
I heard about that.
It's online. He ruined the ending of the Royal Rumble. I'd never seen it before.
Yep.
He looked depressed, and he was just like, yeah, Batista, he's going to get a shot, you know, but I don't think, you know, he comes back. And he said, I like Dave Batista, but he's, you know, it's Daniel Bryan's year. And he's right, but now it's been ruined. Unless they can turn it around quickly. Bryan's got to, if WrestleMania doesn't end with Daniel Bryan holding the championship, that's it. Like, that's it. The whole year's going to be gone.
And I really do think it. Wrestling topic done for the night.
We're done with wrestling?
We're done with wrestling for the night.
Got to rein it in. What do we have left? Q&A?
Q&A. Short Q&A. Right. You're going to take another break?
Yeah.
Takati break?
Just a pee break. Yeah. And then...
take a pee break. Here.
And then... When
we actually didn't even talk about, on this podcast, we didn't talk about Nintendo at all in their press conference.
That's fine. We can skip Nintendo for a week. Look, I love Nintendo, but I'm done fucking talking about
Nintendo? They got to turn Nintendo. Let's get on mic. We'll just...
we've just been talking about them for too much. I mean...
Yeah, Nintendo.
I'll pull that up, but we got to do Nintendo, 20 minutes of Q&A and then...
Not 20, but done. Nintendo had their press conference, whatever it was, a week and a half ago, and basically
we're live?
Yeah, we're live.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean... Here's the deal. Nintendo had the press conference, and it wasn't that fucking exciting. It was a bunch of pretty goddamn words.
They said they're still going to make hardware,
right, consoles, which I want them to.
They're not going to jump into doing apps. They might license.
No, they're going to do some apps. They've already said straight up they're going to.
Did they say that,
apps.
Or they said they're going to connect that to? They didn't say games though.
They straight up said mini games. Oh, I don't know how much of this you read, but basically what I'm gathering is this. I'm gathering that they are going to do little apps. That are going to be.
Are you sure? I read the translation. Yes, no, I thought they said they're going to connect, try to interact more with
people. Go back and read it again. They are, but they said mini games, and what I interpret that is they're going to put out little advertisement games for something that's coming out.
That's what I mean. Maybe we'll make sure. They're not going to put their old games on.
No. That's not at all it.
They're going to do probably the equivalent of those stupid little games you see on the web banner ads.
Yeah, I mean, the next time like a Pikmin comes out, there's going to be like a little Pikmin mini game, you know, and that's it.
That's fine.
That's
fine.
But I'm kind of tired about talking about Nintendo. I hope the Wii U does well. I still want one. The 3DS is fine, but you know, I need to see before we do another full segment on Nintendo. I really need to see some sort of actual changes and not talk.
Sure. All right. Q&A time. This is from Craig fellow. Question for Ian. Has anyone ever brought anything non-gaming related into the store to sell? If so, weirdest one.
Everything under the sun. The saddest thing I think I ever saw. Not the weirdest, but... Guy obviously just...
Trying to...
Uproot everything and like sell off what he could for money. And he had some board game stuff. And I love board games, but...
Monopoly?
I didn't have any cash on me, so I bought the games from him, and he had still packed in foam. There was no board, but it was a set of triple weighted Staunton chess pieces.
Oh wow!
And I would have fucking killed. And he would have sold
ones they use like in tournaments, basically.
Yeah, and I like chess, and I love a good heavy chess piece. Like, and the knights weren't. You can always tell the value of a chess piece set by the intricacy of the knight. That's how they judge the cost, because the knight requires
most carving.
The most carving.
Yeah.
And these were not like top of the line, but these were nice heavy hardwood, and I wanted to buy them from him. And I didn't have the cash to do it because I wasn't going to pay for it out of the drawer. As far as other weird things people have tried to sell me, laptop chargers, keyboards, I mean, all sorts of computer parts. That's really, really, really common. I had someone come in and ask me if I had any use for 10 CRT TVs, and I was like, no. And they just turned around and walked out.
Okay.
So, really, sky's the limit. Imagine it, and it's probably been offered to me.
Sure. At Sinless Destroyer, in celebration of what Justin stood for, what are your favorite import games?
Fire Pro.
I was going to say Fire Pro.
Stands up there.
Goes immediately the whole series. Springs immediately to mind.
Fire Pro would be one. I've also always been a big fan
Mr. Gimmick, if that technically counts. You know, I have the US prototype ROM, but Mr. Gimmick?
Yeah, it probably does. One of my favorite imports that I always owned was Nappletail for the Dreamcast, which was a Sega-made game. The subtitle was... Depending on how you translate it, it's kind of Alice in Dreamland, and it's kind of this 3D, it's a 2D platform with a 3D world that's kind of like a loose take on Alice in Wonderland. But Fire Pro has always been big, and any shooter, that's why I love the PC Engine, just nothing but a plethora of import-only shooters that you can get anywhere else.
You shooter snob. This is from at NoobCube64. If neither of you could ever work around, talk about, play, or associate with video games, what would you do for jobs, hobbies?
Unfortunately for me, I'd probably go back to waiting tables or bartending, because I made really good money. For hobbies, if you listen to the podcast, you should know I have plenty that aren't video game related. Comics, reading, and records, number one.
So you'd be a waiter?
I'd be a waiter. Or a bartender.
When I was 5, I wanted to be an FBI agent, swear to God.
You would make a good FBI agent, I think, just through poses.
Just through poses?
Just through poses.
I actually wanted to do that. I don't know what capacity, maybe a profile at this point. I don't know, but I'm a little nuts myself, so I can find those serial killers. This is from at Goots Ant. Pat, what made you change your focus from 3D PC games to a reappreciation of 2D console games when you skipped the 16-bit era? I brought this up before. The internet, late 90s websites and ROMs got me back into learning about Nintendo. two questions. Okay. Thoughts on the NWC 100K inflating prices and the non-game press coverage of it. Okay.
We were actually going to talk about this, so we can cover it briefly.
So this is what happened. So there's a couple NWC, there's actually two NWC carts that don't have a good label. One, it's like ripped entirely off for the most part. And the other one has Mario on it. They've gone for sale in the past, and I think they've usually gone for like, the last time I saw one sell, maybe $2,500, like 6 years ago, or whatever. So, an NWC cart, it's a real one, got auctioned, put up for auction like, a week ago, it was at this point. And it ended up at $100,000. Obviously, those were troll bids.
Fucking shill bids, yeah. Like
not shill, they were trolls.
Oh, trolls, okay.
It was a guy in Nintendo Age that, he's taking a hit. He gets the money back. But
right, that's the thing. A lot of people have assumed that, I've had people come into the store who are like, it's fake. I'm like, no, it's not. No, like, you can go find the history on this NWC. Yeah. Like,
it's known as the Mario NWC cart, because it's written
Mario on it.
I don't know why they ripped the label off. They just cost themselves thousands of dollars by doing that. Right. But the whole point was, he put it back up for auction. I think it's at $65,000 right now, or best offer. However, when that happened, a couple of profiteers and other people that had one in flip games, another person put their copy on and sold it almost immediately for $17,500. That was a confirmed sale. Before that, Howard Phillips' copy that he sold early last year, I believe, with a bunch of memorabilia and, like, Nintendo, like business cards and, like, folders of shit. Like, that went for $17,500. So this went without all that crap for $17,500. So maybe that's the new benchmark. I don't know. But that sold. So then after that happened, that got picked up by news outlets, BBC News, Yahoo News. And that always sucks. And it sucks because you get a bunch of scammers coming out of the woodwork. And a bunch of profiteers, and you find out who really is a true collector versus who wants to just get a quick profit, too, at the same time. You want to make money, that's fine. But now out of the woodwork, a gold NWC cart came out of the woodwork, one I'd never seen before, ooh, one missing its label as well. And at first I was like, that doesn't look good. His story was kind of weird. His story was like, well, if you know anything about it, they pasted these on so they can easily come off. I've never heard out of the 13 or so, and mine was the 13th one to be found, or at least come to surface. All of them have their labels,
right?
And they all look about the same with the shitty glue marks. Yeah. This one didn't have it; it was torn off. And from looking at it, it almost looked like there were smears of another label being torn off. But a few days later, he has pictures of it opened up with the ROM board there. It's the real ROM board. So let's some fancy photoshopping. It's there. However, that one's been up to $100,000 as well. Again, totally trolled, bidding, talking to each other. So it's a shame because a gold hasn't been sold on eBay, I don't think, in years.
No.
There was a couple of private sales. JJ Games, who actually, I think, sold today the Power Fist 94 cart, which there are two in existence, the Super Nintendo one, which are a big ROM board.
Yeah.
I think it's sold. I don't know. I can check, but... he had a golden NWC card. I think he might have sold for $18,000 or $20,000 a few years ago, but that was a private sale. This gold one, unfortunately, a bunch of shill bidding. Who knows what it's worth? I don't know what the benchmark is, but it's going to be a lot of money because there's a craze right now. I got interviewed for menshealth.com recently about all the NWC stuff, There's an article online. So, yeah, there's just some weird stuff. This happens in waves. It happened with already 4 years ago with Stadium Events when it was found. It was 4 years ago, February. Yeah. And that was bad because a bunch of scammers came out on Craigslist looking for one.
I know it's I know it's a quick fluff piece for like major news outlets to comment on this, and it is. It's amusing to see these things becoming worth money, but it just brings out the worst freaking people.
It does. It brings out some scammers, or some people just want to try to take people for a ride, or like I said, it tells you who's really trying to profiteer, and who's really a collector. Also, say something about Scotland. I like the accents.
A vote for independence.
Is that a political thing going on in Scotland right now?
Yes. Continue.
They're trying to get away from Great Britain?
Continue.
This is from at JTEO1. How did Ian get introduced to the Neo Geo Pocket?
At the point in time when the Neo Geo Pocket color was coming out, I was like heavily, heavily into keeping up with the day-to-day news of video games, especially import stuff. And I've always been a huge fan of SNK. And I love fighters. So when it came out, it was a no-brainer. I don't love the Neo Geo Pocket color because it's obscure or weird, which I think is kind of the first thought that comes into people's minds with certain collectors or people who are fans of video games. Sure. Oh, they like this thing because it's weird or it's odd. No. Have you ever played a fighting game on it? It's fantastic. It's fluid. It works well. I like fighting games. The colors are nice. All the games on it are fun. I love the system to death. And, yeah, that's it. One of my favorite memories was I bought one. And I got it for my birthday when I was a senior. And I got Puzzle Bobble Mini on it, or Super whatever they called it in the U.S., and passed it around to all my friends. And we would just pass it around during school days and go for high scores. And there was an exchange student who was at our school, and he loved it so much that he bought one, mm-hmm. and a buddy of mine bought one, and they used to play Puzzle Bobble Link Battle in the morning, every morning in homeroom. So that's how I got into it, was just by following the news and being like, this is something I want. So, I mean, I've been into it since day one. It wasn't just a recent acquisition. But I think if someone decides they want to try it out, if you like certain things, like SNK or fighting games, you're going to like the system.
Sure. What then he asked, man, my voice is going. I talked a lot.
We did.
Does Pat have a favorite handheld? The Turbo Express. It's my favorite handheld. And it is a handheld, technically.
I played mine the other night.
Oh, the one I got for you.
Yeah, you can keep bringing that up.
Yeah, I will.
It's ridiculous.
I gotta buy a bunch of extra shit that I didn't want to get you that deal now, so you're never gonna sell it. Or I'm gonna buy it back. This is from at NickSteve70. Will there be a Frank wristband for next DVD release? I should do that. Just not order 1,000.
Yeah, because your wristbands are selling at a high pace.
I got rid of like 80 of them so far, 90 of them. I could break even at another 150. This is from at Cartridge Brothers. Do you think a collecting crash like in comics would be good for collectors who aren't obsessed with value but just love games?
At the base, sure.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, yes. Anyway, yeah. No. It would be very good. I think of pinball and the people who hoard these machines, you know, because they're expecting to make like, fuck it. Invest in something legitimate that is
buy gold.
Yeah, that is going to hold its value over time. A crash would be good for people who just want to play games.
I think, like I said before, I think it's crash started having for some of the higher end games. Like
it is.
Flintstones Dinosaur Peak. I think they hit a peak. They're going to slowly come back.
And here's the thing. I think we're kind of seeing it in reverse order. A lot of the games that used to be high for like PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 are starting to recede drastically. And I think we're going to start to see that with Nintendo. And I think the PlayStation 1 and 2 stuff that is starting to recede is going to bounce back because it's newer. But there is going to be some stuff on the Nintendo that loses its value and is not going to bounce back. There are certain things that are never going to get super cheap, but they're going to drop from, say, the 250 range to the 100 range and probably
like,
hover there.
Like a Bonk's Adventure.
Yeah.
Was that $300
Dude,
now?
Dude, that game was... I'm sorry, I mean...
I know it's hard to find.
I know I've said this before, but it wasn't that hard to find in 99, 2000. I passed up on a number of copies because I didn't like it.
Should have hoarded, I mean.
Yeah, I know should've.
Corner that market, Ian. Corner the Bonk's Adventure market. At Jarell underscore 777, what's Ian's opinion on the PC Engine Super Graphics and Shuttle? Wow, the Shuttle, really?
Super Graphics, neat. unnecessary, but very cool for what it is. Still has connectivity, I believe, to the CD.
Does it?
And yes, I believe. And yeah,
it looks good. It does. Cool.
And it looks cool, and there are a couple of really neat games for it. The shuttle, I know some collectors real recently have become obsessed with it.
Why?
I don't know, because it's rare. And it's nothing cool. but rare. All it is a different redesign of the PC Engine, but it doesn't allow CD connection.
That's that dome one, right? It's like dome-ish.
It's the dome one that's got like a shuttle looking back to it, and it's got the weird looking controllers. Like, it's cool, but to me,
that's like just a late release. They just came out with
that. No, it wasn't even a late release. It was just, to me, that I have.
Was it cheaper? Is that why they came out with it? Or?
I don't believe it was cheaper.
It can be cheaper than the little small square thing. Which
all I know is there's no appeal to me. It's simply a redesign that has less features, and it goes for more. That's the type of collecting that I'm not into.
Yeah, I don't get into a lot of the Japanese stuff because of that. It's too nice. Even though LCD would be nice, but handheld, the LTE, that'd be nice.
Oh, sure. But if I could get a Super Graphics for a reasonable price, I'd take it just because I could use everything else I have with it.
Sure. And it has what? How many exclusives are on that?
Only like six or eight, but like I really would love Ghosts and Goblins. Yeah.
At Matt Geiger, MGeiger 2341, one of the most unique birthday presents ever for... Well, this isn't really a question.
I think it's our... We have a podcast on his birthday who he also shares with those two people.
Oh, well, thanks.
That was the closest I could figure.
Okay. Have you two ever played Retro Game Challenge for the DS at Rickety Rack?
Yes. No. It was a lot of fun. It's based on the Game Center CX guys. That's what it is. I really wish the sequel had come here because it seemed way more varied and way more interesting. But yeah, Retro Game Challenge is really fun. It's repetitive, but it's cool.
At Icarus, this can be a complicated one, so we might skip it. But is the Japanese game industry in decline? And if so, how can companies like Capcom and Sega recapture Western audiences?
Yes, here. No, it's simple. I read this one. Okay.
All right.
Yes, it is in decline.
Okay.
It is in decline because right now it is either rehashing shit too heavily, so either it's not creating enough new IPs, or its new IPs are trying to mimic Western games. Like when Capcom did something like Dragon's Dogma, it was in response to things like Skyrim. What Japan needs to do, the Japanese game industry needs to do, is focus on the uniqueness of the games that they used to bring out before, and I think they will see themselves revitalized, which means new properties, new ideas. The U.S. game market needs to focus on new ideas and leave behind things like first-person shooters. It's not just Japan that's declining. It's U.S. that's declining, too. The games industry in general is declining because they're relying too much on what's been done.
Sure. At Mike Lorette, what's your favorite Ninja Turtles game? Ninja Turtles Arcade? Probably. The original?
I would probably say Ninja Turtles Arcade. I do like Ninja Turtles 3 for the NES, but not as much as the actual arcade version of Ninja Turtles. I'm one of those few people, I really, really like the first Ninja Turtles by Konami on the NES.
I like it. It's not my favorite.
I know it's hard. I know it's not exactly fair, but I really like the game because it does so many different things.
They did the best with what they could. At Space Kappa, Air Zonk versus Bonk, who wins? Wow, that's like Predator versus Arnold Schwarzenegger. When you know he gets all, you know, he gets back to tribalism.
Joe, I don't know you, Joe, but I'm gonna talk to you like I know you. I guess I'll go with Airzon because he can shoot stuff.
Bonk has more heart, I think.
Bonk is cuter. He's a little caveman.
At Bearded Gamer 93, what characters would you guys like to see in the new Smash Brothers that haven't been in a previous entry?
Little Mac.
He said, mine would be Little Mac. Mine would be Excitebike guy. I've always said that.
That's fun. I've always said Little Mac. I mean...
Little Mac, it's almost...
Ever since the first one, it's...
It's almost strange how he hasn't been.
Yeah, it has seemed ridiculous to me that Little Mac has not been.
I know he hasn't...
No, he was in the Wii game. Look, I had to think about that, too. I'm like, oh, he hasn't been in anything since the Super Nintendo.
I wouldn't consider Punch Out a franchise just because he hasn't had a game on each system. He had, you know, arcade, whatever. Nintendo, Super Nintendo, then nothing for, like, you know, over 10 years.
Outside of Mario and Zelda, what has had a game on each system?
Star Fox.
Not on the NES.
It didn't come out till Super Nintendo.
And
I mean, after that, it didn't have it on every system.
Did it have
even DS?
It had one on the Wii.
Okay. They had it on the DS and 3DS, but...
Yeah.
So, the whole point is like, three games in, like, 15
Pit.
Years hard...
Fucking Pit! And I'm glad they added him, but he was in two games. And one was a Game Boy game no one knows.
All right, so Little Mac, you think he's going
to
come back?
I think Little Mac needs to be in there.
No idea what this is. I'm sorry, I don't... This is at So Dawesome. Does a Dreamcast VGA box make a noticeable difference in kids' body? I haven't seen one.
Yes, it does. Okay, so here's the deal. It does... Being a VGA box, it has to be hooked up to a computer monitor, a VGA monitor. All you need to do is play Rez on a normal TV with a normal hookup and play Rez with a VGA box on a VGA monitor to see the difference. The VGA monitor makes a huge graphical improvement.
What's a VGA
monitor? For the games that accept it. You have to remember that there are games that do not benefit or will not accept the VGA box.
I've never seen one before, a VGA box. How much do they go for usually?
You can get third-party ones, which if they work, they give you a great picture, but if they don't, which is common, 15 to 20.
That's not bad.
A official one, a bit.
Oh, man.
It's been a minute since I've looked it up, but a bit.
At Adam Boland 2, what are your thoughts on the Nintendo Force magazines? Do you think they'll make or die? I have no idea what Nintendo Force is.
It's the you don't? Come
no.
On, we talked about it before.
Did we? Is that like
it's a continuation of Nintendo Power.
Who's running it?
I don't know. It's just people. Here's my thing. I think the Nintendo Force magazine was a great idea because people had a lot of heart and they wanted to make it happen. They saw Nintendo Power dying and they wanted to continue the print magazine. There's two problems with that. One is, especially right now, one is Nintendo is not commanding enough market share to...
They're doing a Kickstarter right now, actually.
Are they really? They're doing another one?
Another one? They did one before?
I'm fairly certain.
They've raised $35,000, a 49 goal.
Is that for Volume 2?
Year 2.
So do yeah, Year 2. Year?
Okay.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. Nintendo is not... Because of the Wii U, is not popular enough to really warrant its own magazine.
Even with the DS, 3DS, you don't think it's...
No, I mean, that helps it. But it's still... Any sort of singular system magazine is pretty freaking tough right now. And while I believe everyone's heart was in the right place, Nintendo Power was beloved. They should have looked at, why couldn't Nintendo Power survive in a print medium? Well, maybe because a print medium isn't that popular. Retro is a niche, right? Okay, so like that magazine has a chance by advertising to a specific niche, yeah. but a full on mass produced Nintendo only magazine is really, it's got a lot of hurdles it's got to jump to be successful, and I don't know that it's going to work. If the yearly Kickstarters work for it,
but
great.
There you go. That's what they're doing.
That's fine. I hope that it works for them because I love print media, but I do have my doubts.
I gotta give you a copy of Retro Magazine still.
I would like that. No, you did not.
I'll do that. They mailed me an extra by accident. I am a writer now for Retro Magazine, and my first article will appear in issue number 2.
I can't wait.
I'm appearing in the same magazine as Shaw, maybe.
Yeah.
Who I grew up idolizing.
All right. That. You said that like 500 times.
This is from at Sylvester 41596. At this point, what do you feel could fix Batman versus Superman?
I kind of touched on it. Like, two more bad castings.
And that's what you want. You want this?
Yeah, two more bad castings and no one giving a fuck could totally fix that movie. I would watch that.
Halle Berry as Hawk Girl.
Yeah, there you sure. Go. Why not?
You know?
Why not?
Matthew McConaughey as Aquaman. There you go. You don't want to see that.
King Rames as Cyborg.
Oh, okay. What is this from Jeron? Hey, Jeron. What do you think is the most unplayable game ever created? Any platform is fair game. It's always tough for the what is the worst or most.
Yeah, unplayable. That really hurts because it's like I gotta think long and hard.
We'll come back to that. That's a tough one. I always have trouble with like the most. It's like okay, because I wouldn't play an unplayable game. So
Space Invaders.
Space Invaders, really?
I'm just saying that to piss off Norm. Norm, you don't listen to this shit.
No,
but anyways,
it's not the most. Shut up, Norm. All right, Dr. Karate Chop. I'll keep it short and sweet. Favorite superhero villain? For me, it's Spider-Man. And then favorite villain? Villain I don't think about a lot. Doctor Doom is pretty badass. Doctor Doom is a pretty good villain. Joker's a good villain. Those are the Green Goblin's a good villain. Those are three of the big ones. I mean,
Doom is good. Favorite superhero?
For me, it's always been Spider-Man with Captain America second. Those are mine.
There's a lot that I like right now that make it tough. I like Hawkeye a lot, especially current Hawkeye. I like Iron Fist a lot. I like Dread a lot. He's not really a superhero. He's kind of an anti-hero. As far as villain, yeah, I would have to go probably Doom or... gotta be honest, Joker.
Joker's iconic.
Pretty fucking iconic and pretty goddamn devious. Like, yep. I like Joker.
This is from Helen. Hey, Helen.
Hi, Helen.
Pat Ian. So you... That was really enthusiastic.
Pat Ian.
So you both need to watch Frozen. Here's my question. Will you go watch Frozen? No.
Yes.
It got good reviews. No.
I've wanted to watch Frozen. There's a lot of singing in it. Bonnie does not like singing, so I'm going to have to talk her into it.
This is from at Nark Podcast. We only about five more left. How niche does your card collecting get? Do you collect screw variants, label variants, not for resale cards, etc.? I don't seek out screw variants. I think that's boring as hell. I do have a few. I have like the Donkey Kong 3 screw, which is hard to find. That goes for like $100. Last I check, who knows what it's worth now? Or, you know, there's like the Star Force 5 screw that's hard to find. There's like 10 out there. There's supposedly a Mike Tyson's punch out. 5 screw that got discovered and people are going, oh my god, I don't give a shit. Label variants is a little different. If it's totally different, like the Metroid on the NES, how both are totally different, that's fine. Or both punch outs or different games, I don't seek them out though. I don't go nuts like people that will differentiate between the gold seal or the clear seal, and it's like, no, I really don't care.
Video game collecting, I don't get weird at all about it. As a matter of fact, I openly
despise.
Hold on. This is a two Takate night. I actively make fun of people who want to go after... Do you have this game?
Where's my donkey?
Is it Black Label or Green Label? That drives me nuts. However, as much as I don't understand that, I can get really picky about the records I'm buying.
Three screw. It's worth money. Or it's rare.
As much as I will give people shit about that, I'm just as bad. I can be very weird about my comic books, my regular books, and my records in terms of what I buy. I will buy first editions, second editions. I will buy limited colors and normal colors. I will get crazy with records and books and things like that.
Just found a first edition of The Shining. Not first print, but first edition. Oops. That could have been bad.
Okay, whatever.
It wasn't the first print. I looked it up. It was the first print. It would be worth $100. It's worth like $40. Sure. But it's cool. It's before Stephen King was even famous because his name is real small. It's not like Stephen King. It's
right,
like
right.
It's like this is a guy that wrote a couple of books. It's like he wrote. I think he wrote Christine and Carrie. You know, it's like his third book or whatever. Or one of his. I used to have a Jaramite 3 screw, which I knew was really rare. Or after the fact, I got rid of it when I was back in Jersey. But I kept the box for it, which is the non-hang tab box, which is supposedly hard to find because that's when they stopped. When they switched over boxes from hang tab in whatever that was, late 87 or whatever that hell that was. I don't even know. They went to the non-hang, so they stopped doing Jarman after that. I have the box, but I don't have the game for it. So the box is probably worth a lot of money, but whatever. Don't care.
Go on.
At VG Heaven, rank your top 3 Sonic the Hedgehog games. I don't like Sonic the Hedgehog games for the most part.
All right, number 1, Sonic 3 plus Knuckles. Best game ever, and yes, you have to consider it a full game because
the 3 game and the Knuckles?
Sonic 3 plus Knuckles combined. It's one full game. It's always been meant to be one full game.
But they only
game.
Packed in the Sonic and Knuckles.
They divided one game into two pieces, and for decades, people have not been able to figure that out. It's one game. When you put it together, the mid-boss changes and makes it easier because it's supposed to be one long fucking game.
So if you just play the pack in by itself, what happens?
You get like the second half and it's bullshit.
Oh, is it the second half of the game?
Yes. Yeah, Sonic & Knuckles is
It starts in the middle of the game?
Sonic & Knuckles is the second half of Sonic 3.
That's kind
of
weird.
Yes, it is. So Sonic 3 plus Knuckles is the best.
I mean, I know you can pop in one and play him in one.
Sonic 2 is really good, and then I love Sonic 1, but actually I don't hate Sonic Adventure, so I'll give that third spot.
I should have said I don't like Sonic the Hedgehog, I just don't never want to play it.
You're a weirdo.
I think the games are...
Weirdo.
I think the games are pedantic.
Weirdo. Try playing them like a normal game.
And the speedy parts are fun, but anything outside of the speed parts is fucking awful.
No, it's not. Stop trying to do everything speedy. That's the fucking thing about Sonic the Hedgehog. Everything.
But that's the whole point of the game.
No, it's not the whole point.
He's Sonic! His name is Sonic!
It's
he
not! Goes fast. It's not! That's like saying the whole point of Mario Brothers is to be Fireball Mario.
No, because that's not in his name! He's not Fire Mario, it's Sonic!
Continue.
The Hedgehog.
Just move on.
As in Super Sonic, which means very
just
quick.
Just move on before I kill you.
It's a weird game. He starts really slow, you jump around, then it's a really bad platformer anyway.
You're a bad platformer.
This is at Link 2. What should Amazon do so their console doesn't end up like the Ouya? I don't know Amazon had a console.
Neither did I. What can they do?
That must have happened today.
I don't know. Advertise it first, foremost.
What are your thoughts on mine? It's from at Gamer Going Gray, who I think I used to see in RetroWare Post.
We see him a lot.
What are both your thoughts on Minecraft as a game and now an entire brand?
Okay, here's the thing. I really want to play it. I really, really do. I would love to. It was something that I could convince my fiance to sit down and play with me just in split-screen mode. Yeah. I'd be really into it. But it requires a lot of time.
You
got to
play forever.
It requires a lot of time. And it's not like and I give it credit because it's not like an MMO. You don't have to grind just to get levels and stuff. But building stuff and doing things in Minecraft takes time, and I don't have that time.
Sure. Jesus Christ, we got like 9 new questions. We just got shit. Oh, we're going to have to go through this quickly.
Pick and choose. Pick and choose.
We're going to have to skip.
Sorry, guys.
Most underrated console that is in the TurboGrafx-16.
PC Engine.
I'm not talking about George Zimmerman boxing DMX, even though that sounds really cool.
Fuck both of them.
what's your favorite finishing move of all time?
In wrestling?
Chartbuster, Disco Inferno.
Orange Crush.
Orange Crush? Yeah. Who's that do that?
Kobayashi, it's like pulls up to like a straight like suplex, but then drops you sheer drop on your neck and head like
Steiner screwdriver. That was.
Boom. Yeah, well, Steiner stole it from someone.
Oh, so, did he?
Yeah, pull up and then boom, drop to seated to pin.
Steiner stopped doing it. He probably killed someone almost.
Yeah, because it's fucking dangerous as shit, but I love that move.
Well, Steiner said he invented the Frankensteiner.
He did it.
Or Hurricane.
And also, I really love a double underhook DDT. Those are
no
those
one
are
does
cool.
A fisherman's DDT. No one does that.
No one does a double underhook DDT right now. No, I don't mean fisherman's.
Mick Foley used
I mean, like head.
Yeah, Mick Foley used
arms.
To do that.
Yeah, yeah. Mick Foley used to. I love that move, but I don't know anyone
else. Why
does
someone
does
do a
it.
Fisherman's DDT? Is that too dangerous too?
Probably because the person can't use their forearms to block the impact of their face.
That's why I always use it in Fire Pro. Always fisherman's DDT is my finisher.
Yeah, it's great.
Always. I've never actually seen it. I gotta YouTube it. Have you seen the new Serenity comic in the Firefly universe? No, I have not.
Nope, know nothing about it.
Decent show, overrated. I can see why it has a cult following, though. Hey, Ian, how would you feel if Stone Cold Steve Austin was Lex Luthor?
That might be all right. That's yeah, sure, I'm good with that.
This is from Allie. Hey, Allie. Make a video, Allie. That'd be nice. Ian, if the Superman Batman cast were replaced by Lois and Clark actors, how much money would you throw at Zack Snyder? I like Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher in those roles. This is why, Allie, you have to make videos, Allie. You are very talented and funny.
Best question. I don't know that I'd throw any money at Zack Snyder, but I'd be more inclined to see it.
I would see that.
Yeah, I would too.
I would pay to see that.
Me too.
Do either of you have a favorite kind of pickle? I love deli style. Clausens are the best in the store you can get.
Bread and butter.
Oh God. Ian mentioned that game characters used to do the peace sign a lot. From what I understand, that's supposed to be V for victory. This is what I learned as a kid. That this was peace, this was victory. That's what I learned as a kid. This was victory, that was peace. In the 60s, this was peace. I don't know if they co-opted victory from that, but in the US, that's peace.
Maybe
the hippies did that.
Yeah, I mean, I assume this was peace, and the thing is, if you look at...
It goes back to my Panic Restaurant review, where Cookie actually does that. No, he does that, so I say he makes the peace sign. People were saying, no, it's victory.
Now, I'm pretty sure that's a peace sign. When you look at all the pictures, and when you look at, like, stereotypical Japanese pictures, animes, things like that, it's always, you know, smiles at, like, a park with this. What are they victorizing?
So I'm right. I was right, Mr. YouTube comment from 4 years ago.
I mean, it could be, but I've always assumed... I mean, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I've always assumed that's peace, not victory.
All right, we got 3 more questions and we're out.
Good.
My teeth are floating. At Retro Unscripted, do you recall the first pinball machines that you ever played? If so, what were they? I actually don't.
I've actually been trying to figure that out lately. I think mine was Fireball Classic, which was a solid state recreation of Fireball.
And our last question on this CU podcast, the longest one, it's been 2 hours, 10 minutes. We did take some breaks. We'd take a piss break once or twice, and you probably take a third one. This is from at RetroCore. Is Ian scared to take on my Kirby's Pinball Land scores?
No, I just haven't had the time. I'm actually fairly good at the game. I do need some practice. It's been a very busy weekend with work, setting a wedding date, and other such things. But no, I'm not afraid, and yes, I will send you a scoreboard update, even if it's not beating yours, within the next few days.
And with that, we are done with this completely unnecessary podcast. It seemed necessary this week, though.
We have been all over the place in terms of emotion.
We laughed, we cried, you drank two huge...
I drank two large beers.
You drank 40 ounces of freaking beer.
I drank 48 ounces.
48 ounces. Yep. Pat and Ian, stay seated for once. Pat and Ian, we'll see you in 2 weeks. I forgot to mention this. My next NES Punk episode, I'm going to write it this weekend. It will be in memory of Justin. It's going to look at some of my import Famicom games. NES Punk episodes. That's what I'm going to be doing. Forgot to mention that. And we'll see you guys in a couple weeks. And we are signing out.
Good day.
Night.
Night.
Hearts.